Just got that in, Corey. Good job.
That's right.
You've opened a bag of Cheetos at the last minute and just gotten it in. I'm sure. Corey Hall's joining me. Joel Radio, welcome in. Last show of 2017. Good to have y'all back. Second show in a week. We did a big Star Wars review last week. Thanks again to Josh Boaz, Ellen Stakowitz, and everyone who listened to that are...
Ryan Johnson. Daisy Ridley.
Yeah.
John Boyega.
I had no idea the shit show that...
Laura Dern.
You know,
no.
No. I had no idea that that was going to... Like, we did the review and we were negative at certain elements. Star Wars. We're going to talk a little bit more about Star Wars later, I think, in maybe in a little more spoilery way. But, boy, that has been the big news of the week. And we kind of did that show right after the first screening and... Went like, oh, there were things in there we didn't like, and boy, some people didn't like those more than we didn't like those. So it's crazy, but
boy, nothing gets more coverage than Real Wars. The Star Wars
it's thing. Crazy. So we'll talk about all that. I'm gonna get it. We're gonna call Ted Moss during the show.
Oh, geez.
So Corey, we know when Corey's going to the bathroom.
Yeah, I'll
we'll talk to Ted Moss today. Disney bought Fox. We might tie that into Star Wars on some level, and. Bunch of movies. It is Oscar season officially. I think it's safe to say that. Mm-hmm. And I have been screening these Golden Globe nominated movies, as has Corey. So we'll talk about all that. But one thing
I've seen most of.
Yeah.
There's maybe like two things I've still got to see.
Does the season.
I haven't seen the post yet. That's
what about the shrinking, the Alexander Payne movie?
That's the only. Yeah. That's
Downsizing.
The other, yeah. Those are like the two I have.
That
seen.
Opens this week. What about the greatest.
Oh, Phantom Thread.
The greatest show on earth.
Oh, that looks terrible.
Well, can I tell you?
All right,
you?
So there's like those are like the last, like Phantom Thread, the Paul Thomas Anderson movie. Anyway,
okay. Well, we'll tell you what we've seen and what we haven't seen as far as those go, because I did a bunch of catching up this week on those. But last week, you know, it happened before we went to Star Wars. I flew in that day, but went to New York last week and had a great time over there. So. Went to Springsteen on Broadway. That was wonderful. That is, you know, that is the hardest ticket in the history of Broadway, they're saying. So, fuck your Hamilton. This is a tougher ticket than Hamilton, believe it or not, at this point.
Well, how many,
which is insane.
How many shows and how big is it?
Well, it's funny. They initially, I think, announced like a three-month run, and then that became... Now it's going till like next July, so it would be October to July, so whatever that is, like nine months.
He's just
going to
not tour, he's just going to hang
easy.
Out.
He's fucking hanging out on Broadway. Well, they're saying when he gets done on Broadway, he's going to go to London and fucking do it there. So it's unbelievable that the demand for these things. 900-seat theater. Now, when I say 900 seats, that sounds big, but it is a tiny theater. Just so you can keep it in mind, and if you've been there, it is smaller physically. The footprint of the theater is smaller than Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle.
Oh, really?
Because the seats are just jammed together, and there's like two balconies, and it's just a tiny little thing. I mean, I was in like the eighth row, and you're just shoulder to shoulder with people.
You could technically get more people into Mark Ridley's Castle, the Comedy Castle, the way the seating is arranged.
Well, there's tables for people to have their drinks.
Tables are spread apart a little bit.
Yeah. No, this fucking Broadway, they jam
you
in.
You just set chairs next to each other, you could get 600 people in there.
And, you know, at an $850 face value top ticket for Springsteen, you know, you need as many seats as you can. That's big money, you know, night after night. So, I went to that. It was fucking great. I mean, and I would say that this is true. First of all, it's becoming a hot thing where people are just going, even if they're not Bruce fans, which is making it harder for the Bruce fans to get in. And it's like, it is a show where you could enjoy it even if you don't like Bruce. I mean, not that you, if you hate guys playing the guitar, I'm not saying you'll like it, but like you can definitely enjoy this show. It is made for a general audience. It is not like Springsteen super fans. It is the story of his life. He comes out and immediately starts talking. It's a lot of passages from his autobiography, which came out last year, Born to Run. And then some of that, he's playing music behind it. And then he goes into, you know, acoustic versions of the song, some on guitar, some on piano. His wife joined him for a couple songs, some of the Tunnel of Love stuff she helped him out with. But yeah, real intense. Really intense. Great sound. Amazing show. Everyone, I would tell you to go see it, but at this point, you pretty much have to go on StubHub. So here's the deal. I'm there. Guys in my row. Two seats over a guy from Atlanta. Now, I paid $700 face value for my ticket, okay? This guy, $1,800 this guy paid from Atlanta. The guy sitting to the right of me bought his the day of the show for like $800. The guy to the left, directly to the left of me, I forget what he paid, but this guy had to be 70 years old. His 400th Springsteen show.
What is that?
Complete mania. Yeah. But none of those guys had seen the Broadway show yet. It was crazy.
I don't get that.
Well, I'll tell you this. You would actually enjoy the Broadway show. It's a really good show. It's
as
just
opposed
not
to all the other Springsteen shows I haven't seen.
Well, it's not, you know, it's not doing the stadium rock thing, which some people don't like about Bruce. And this strips that all away and just gets to the storytelling and the performance, and it was excellent. So it's very good. So yeah. So anyway, like I said, everyone's going to this thing. So I was on the Springsteen message board. There's a whole thread about what celebrities are going to what shows. So I'm like, okay, there's going to be big celebrities. We're in New York. Now, granted, it's a Tuesday night. I'm seeing this. What celebrities would be at Springsteen? And there's been all kind of Judd Apatow was there. And
Art Matrano.
Art Matrano was not there.
Billy Saluga.
All right, stop talking about Gilbert's guest and let me tell you. So I go,
Jimmy J.J. Walker.
There's got to be celebrities at Springsteen. Who's going to be here tonight? I mean, what was it? Who's the FBI guy? Comey was there.
James
the
Comey
other night.
Was there.
Okay. Was there, and like, because Bruce kind of references Trump, and Comey quoted Bruce, which was...
Comey's like 6'8 or something,
yeah,
right? He's like a tall dude.
Yeah, I wouldn't sit
you
behind him.
You didn't want to sit behind him.
No. So anyway, so I didn't really see a whole lot of celebrities going in. I think to the left, in there's two sort of boxes, sort of the real exclusive seats up high, and I look to the left, and I'm pretty sure it's Barry Diller in the one. What is Barry Diller own now? Viacom? What is
Barry Diller used to be at Paramount.
USA Network and all that shit. So I don't know what Barry Diller owns anymore.
A big mogul.
It appears that it's Barry Diller, the media mogul billionaire. And the one box, the other box, I don't see anybody there when the show starts. Oh, whatever. Okay. Then as Bruce was doing Born to Run, they tell you no cameras. They're Nazis about cameras at this thing. It's okay. Nazis about cameras. Who cares? Yeah. I don't need a photo of this. Well, by the time he's doing the last number, Born to Run, everyone's got their camera out. So I don't give a shit. I'll take some pictures, right? So I take a few of Bruce. I look up to the right opera box where no one was. Now, granted, I see her from behind for the most part at this point. But pretty easily identifiable, Jennifer Lopez.
Okay.
J-Lo herself sitting there. So, I mean, just above my head, like 10 feet in the air, right to my right, J-Lo. And with her, Alex Rodriguez. So J-Lo and A-Rod.
Oh, okay.
Two A-holes, kind of. But everyone's standing up, giving Bruce a standing ovation. I got some shots of J-Lo and A-Rod. Maybe I'll put those up on JoelRadio.net. They're on my Facebook if you want to go look at those. So those guys were there. They were. And then, of course, lots of backstage photos on A-Rod's Instagram with Bruce. Because he's been a big fan for years, I bet. You know what I mean? That's what I mean. People just show up to show up.
How dare Barry Diller with his $3 billion in the bank come to a show on Broadway? He didn't go to the show in Cleveland.
He did not.
All right,
I did. Right, okay. But it's quite the scene. So I recommend, I mean, there's stories every day in the paper about the record business it's doing and the extensions and what celebrities are there. So it's quite the thing. So it was fun to be at the epicenter of that. And I love Bruce, and it was a great show. And look, I'll be honest with you. Bruce acoustic over the years, I've not always been a fan of. Like, I love Nebraska.
Well, that's one thing we have in common.
But didn't like Devils and Dust. I love that it's going to be a punchline that I'm never going
to
sell.
You're just talking to me like I'm a person who cares.
I'm talking to the audience.
No one cares.
The audience does care because it's in the paper every day. It's the hottest ticket in the history of Broadway. People care about this.
No
it's
one
fine.
Under 70 okay. cares.
Okay, it's fine. We're moving on.
All right.
Let me just finish this and we'll move on.
Okay.
We'll move on. That's how the show works. We talk about things and we move on. It's fine.
What can I talk about that you wouldn't care about?
Well, I'll let you talk about whatever you want to talk about. Okay. Every day you come in and I go, what do you want to talk about, Corey? And I write it down and then we talk about it. Right. It's not a
How else was your trip to New York?
I'm going to get into those things. Well, I had one last point, and now I can't even remember it.
Okay.
No, but I'm saying I haven't always liked Bruce acoustic because I've always liked it better with the band, but this one really worked. He really did a great job with it. So anyway, there's Springsteen on Broadway. So here's the deal. I'm going to New York flying, And, you know, when you go to New York, and especially around the holidays, there's been Al-Qaeda warnings. Oh. We will attack New York. I mean, literally, like, images of blood in Times Square.
There was a pipe bomb at the Port Authority.
And there he is. And, boy, you are a great co-host today. Shitting on topics, giving away the punchline.
I'm on fire.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm sitting at the gate waiting to fly from Detroit. So that's the first thing. First of all, if you're in the weather, you fear the weather because it's December, and you fear terrorism, I guess, or I don't really fear it, but it's always possible. So, yeah, I hear pipe bomb, Port Authority bus terminal. So I'm like, holy fucking shit. How is this going to affect? I mean, could there be multiple bombs? I don't know. And I have to take off. I have no cell coverage. I have no data. I don't know anything. I land. Turns out it was a guy kind of blew himself up but still didn't die. I don't know if that was by design.
Well, no, I think he just wasn't very good at it.
Yeah, well, that's good to know that there's bad terrorists. Yeah. Like, meaning that they're inept.
I would say probably, like, I don't know what the percentage is, but probably 30 or 40% of them don't, like, tried to blow himself up outside the Stade de France in Paris. Like,
yeah. That was like a FIFA match or something, wasn't
it?
Yeah,
it was like France and Germany game, and he...
A Euro match.
Blew up like outside the state. You know what I mean? They kind of don't achieve their objective.
Yeah. Well, you could be a little nervous trying to pull that off. It's not...
I mean, if you kill one person, that's horrible and tragic, but a lot of times these guys fail in their...
If you're a suicide bomber, I'm going to make a blanket statement and say that the odds are that's the first time you've attempted that.
Well, that's, yeah.
You know what I mean? I think by the very nature of what you're trying to accomplish, you probably don't have a lot of experience.
I'm being a little nitpicky because I have not blown myself up with a pipe bomb.
No.
So I can't really judge. Yeah. That's true.
Right. Maybe it's harder than you and I would imagine.
Yeah.
So anyway, like some people had hearing damage, I guess. It was in a subway tunnel. But anyway, I land, I take the train in from Newark, and like traffic is just snarled. That's the worst thing. In addition to people dying, once you know everyone's okay, you go, okay, how am I going to get to where I need to go? I need to get a cab uptown. Well, 8th Avenue is closed. 42nd Street is closed. I'm like, oh, God damn it. So anyway, this cab, very nice Ghana. Is that if you're from Ghana, what are you called?
That's a good question. I don't know.
West African cab driver.
Well, we had a friend from Ghana.
We did, yeah. Yao. Was it anything? Yao?
What was his name? He was nuts. Wasn't he in here one time?
I don't know if he was ever in here. I can't remember, but he was a weird guy. He used to hang out at Club Bart. But
he was a Ghanaian. I mean, it's either Ghanaian or Ghanaian.
Ghanaian. Well, it was a very nice...
Well, you know, it's like Michigander or Michiganian. And I've never heard one son of a bitch say Michiganian.
No.
And have you ever
it's
heard
Michigander.
Anyone, have you ever heard anyone say that?
Not from Michigan.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want you in your mind, Corey, to imagine... Ghanaian cab driver. Imagine what that looks like, because that's exactly what he looked like. So this smiling guy is like, "Ah, no problem, I get you what you need." You know, he was very cool. He didn't really give a shit about traffic, which was nice. But it did take me at least double the time to get and like more than twice the money to get where I needed to go.
Did you try to Uber in New York?
I didn't Uber in New York because the convenience of just walking out of the hotel and grabbing a cab. I took two cabs, and you know, so it was fine. One time I had the Hotel Bellman get a cab, and the other time I got one at Penn Station. When I got off the train, I got Penn Station, and they have a taxi line, and there's like a guy there that sort of hails the cab for you. So it was super easy.
Well, New York and London are the two easiest places to get cabs in the world. But
I Ubered when I was in Brooklyn, like a couple trips ago to New York.
Right, because there's not a lot of
cabs. Because it wasn't like they were just driving down Broadway.
If you're in Manhattan, it's easier to get a cab.
Yeah, they're right at the doorstep. So anyway, the cab took a lot of, you know, it was fucking took forever, but got to New York, had a great time. Little Central Park, and snow was on the ground. It had snowed a couple days before, but it was pretty mild. It was in the 40s. That was nice. Met up with my friend Chrissy, who used to date a comic.
Yeah.
Who lives in New York and does real estate. So we went to, we had some sushi, had some drinks, went to Rockefeller Center. That's fantastic. I recommend, I know that's like a, that's sort of a thing that you hear. The ice rink, the fucking gigantic tree. And then the thing that I didn't realize was so cool was the Saks Fifth Avenue window.
Oh, yeah.
Which was amazing. They were doing the Snow White animatronic show. And then the whole building is like lights. Cued to music. It was unbelievable. It was all Christmas like a motherfucker there. It was great. So fun. So they did that. And then Bruce was the next night. And then I go, I got to fly home the next day. Had a nice big old New York pizza.
There you go.
Angelo's Pizza. Angelo's Pizza. That's
original Angelo's or famous Angelo's.
Well, you know what? I did go by Famous Original Ray's. Mm-hmm. And I walked by Famous Original Ray's, and it looked like a dump. But Angelo's is a nice sit-down place. You get a whole pie. Delicious. It was actually right around the corner from the hotel. By the way, I got you a Christmas present. This ties into my story.
Is this a slice from Angelo's?
That is, I have balled up a slice in that gift bag.
6-day-old slice.
Eh, it's not quite that. Oh, but open up your present. Oh. Corey gets a Christmas
gift. Of course, didn't think to get
it. I don't give a fuck. It's fine.
All right, what do we got here?
Well, you got something. Oh. Any clues so far?
It's not a loaf of bread.
It's not a loaf of bread.
It is a mug.
It is a coffee mug.
Wow!
Look at that.
It's a Late Show with Stephen Colbert mug. That is incredible.
That it is. And
were you a special guest of the Late Show with Stephen
Colbert? I did not attend a Late Show with Stephen Colbert, but the hotel, that's why I'm talking about Angelo's.
Wow.
The hotel and Angelo's were right next door to the Ed Sullivan Theater. And so I went into the gift store there, which is right next to Ed Sullivan, which is the old K&L's Rock America from Sirajul and Mujibur fame from Letterman days. They weren't there. There were two young Pakistani guys.
To those guys?
I don't know. Maybe they retired. In 96, when I went to NYU, I went in there and met Mujibur, I think. I think. It might have been Sirajul, but it was guy.
Is the Hello Deli still there?
The Hello Deli is there. I didn't go in there. But I did go into that gift store, which was the old K&L's Rock
America. I wish Colbert
America.
Would go over to the Hello Deli and see what Rupert G.
So anyway, they were selling some Colbert
stuff.
Look
at that. That's awesome.
Well, it's nice. It's a nice mug, too.
Yeah,
it looks
great.
Good. So there you go.
I do enjoy a coffee mug.
Stephen Colbert coffee mug.
Wow.
From next door to Colbert.
Well, that makes me wish now. I used to walk by the Ed Sullivan and I took pictures of the Letterman marquee and stuff, and now I wish I'd gone and bought a Letterman mug.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Well, I figured that was a nice gift for
that
you.
That is
you
a
like
great
coffee,
gift. I appreciate
you like
that a
Colbert
lot. Thank you.
And I guess it's semi-official.
I'm a sucker for a mug. I am always ready for.
I don't know if that's the one they use on the show. Very well, maybe.
My wife is like, enough with the mugs, but I am always a sucker for
it. Anyway, and Angelo's, if you do, even on Google Street View, you'll see Angelo's.
Mugs and pint glasses.
Emeritania Hotel, which is where I stayed at 54th and Broadway. The souvenir shop where I got that. Angelo's Pizza and the Ed Sullivan Theater all right there. So that's where I was staying. So then to get home, I had to go back to Newark. And got out to Newark Airport, heard my flight was delayed because Detroit was getting a ton of snow. And I go, okay, well, I'm delayed an hour. Who gives a shit? I'm at the airport. I'll kill some time. Got some Auntie Anne's pretzel bites, trying to enjoy myself.
You know, real authentic New York.
Real great. Well, at this point, you're at the airport. Who gives a shit? You're not in Manhattan. Yeah. You know, what can you do? So I'm sitting there, and I have the United app. Flight's delayed again. Okay, no big deal. Half an hour later, that flight's canceled. Another flight. Meanwhile, I've already checked my bag. Half an hour later, now you're canceled. You're on this new flight. Turns out I'm supposed to get in at midnight now at this point. I was supposed to get in at 3 in the afternoon. Now it's turning into midnight. I'm like, God damn it. My flight's been changed like 5 times. I'm calling Comedy Castle because I'm supposed to do my student showcase that night. My students from the advanced comedy class, which starts on January 6th, the next session. Call 248-542-9900 to sign up for that. But my students are supposed to graduate. I'm supposed to be there. I can't get in. Detroit's getting hammered with snow. And I'm like, okay. Then they tell me, this flight that's supposed to get in at midnight is canceled. We're booked you for 6 a.m. the next day. So I'm like, God damn it. And it's like 4:30 in the afternoon. And I got a 6 a.m. flight the next day. I'm like, well, what do you do? So I go to the Delta the counter, and I go, how can I get home tonight? And they're like, well, you know, it's canceled, and you're just going to have to, you know, figure out a way to stay. And I go, well, if I get a hotel, does United compensate me? And they're like, no, the FAA canceled the flight. No compensation, no voucher, no nothing.
It was a weird deal where it wasn't like that much snow.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like we've gotten like 8-9 inches of snow. This was more like 5. Hmm. But it just kept snowing.
Yeah, the timing of it was bad. It was like an all-day snow event.
It was like
event.
Snowing a half inch, an hour for like 6 hours. You know, just and it didn't stop snowing for like 2 days.
Yeah,
so they couldn't even plow.
So anyway, I'm stuck. I had to get a room. Now, meanwhile, I gave United my bag. So as I'm asking these questions, I go, okay, well, I'm going to get a hotel room. I found one that was the cheapest affordable thing, $91 for the night, the Ramada, which has a hotel shuttle, so at least it'll be free to get over there. And I said, well, what about my bag? I checked this thing at noon or whatever, and now it's 5. And they're like, well, it'll take 3 hours to get your bag out of check luggage. And I go, all right, I'll see you tomorrow morning. and I didn't get my bag, and I had my carry-on, which is my camera bag, which had, like, my phone charger, at least, so, you know, I can keep that going. And went over to the Ramada, had dinner at the Ramada, and sat there and stared at the wall.
So you just wore the same clothes?
Wore the same clothes the next day. They gave me a disposable toothbrush. And, like, a little, like, sampler toothpaste. Not even a tube. Mm-hmm. Like, one of those things you tear and, like, squeeze out the toothpaste. They gave me a razor, which looked like the most torturous third world razor. But since I didn't have my beard trimmer, I decided to shave with that horrible thing. And I did that. And it was a nightmare.
Not to be a princess, but disposable razors. I don't shave much anymore because, you know, the beard. But
yeah.
I can't do the disposable. I mean, I can do, I can do like a Gillette.
Yeah.
But if it's like one of those throwaways out of the bag.
Oh, no. This was like
cut your face right up.
The dime store fucking razor with like a little tube of some sort of shave bomb. I just said, fuck it, I'm doing it. I don't give it. Because my neck will get itchy if I don't shave. I usually use a beard trimmer. But anyway, so I did all that. Got up at 3:15 a.m. to get on the airport shuttle at 4 to make it to the. It was a disaster. But I did get home. Got home. At least my car was in a parking garage and wasn't full of snow, so that was something. And then drove home in a snowstorm, in what was, you know, rush hour traffic the next day after the snowstorm. So what a fucking trip. But New York was great, traveling blue, but that's kind of the way it goes. So there you go.
Yeah, you know, that's, and it didn't snow in New York at all.
It rained a little bit on the Tuesday in the afternoon. But it was New York was great. I love it. And I tell you, I could do an annual Christmas in New York trip. That was really fun. I could see doing that.
That'd be cool. I've been really in New York. I've been in New York in the winter, and it's nice. I mean,
you know, you never know what you're going to get. You could definitely have gets like me delayed and snowed in. But it was great.
New York has kind of this Atlantic climate, so that it's not quite as cold as
It'll,
I mean, it gets cold, but.
It'll warm up.
It's not like it's not like Wisconsin in February.
No,
you know,
or like, even like northern Michigan or you know, the lake effect snow of Buffalo or
it'll
the
snow
west side
and then
of
it'll be 42 the next day. Anyway,
so it was great. I had a great time.
You know, I have done I've done a lot of New York. I don't think I've ever been in New York at like July, like 4th of July. But I've been there.
That sucks. Actually, when New York is too hot, it blows.
It's super hot.
Yeah,
but I've been there in Halloween. That was cool.
Yeah.
And Christmas time, so
go to New York in like April can be nice, you know. May. But yeah, summertime can be oppressive, and if you get a bad snowstorm, I think winter could suck, but cuz you got to have good shoes to trek through cuz there was still slush on the ground.
Well, yeah, but
at least
you can use the subway.
Yeah, you can use subway.
So, you know.
I tried to avoid the subway, but I ended up Chrissy wanted to hang out somewhere, so we went to the Lower East Side on Tuesday afternoon
and there you go.
Took the train over there. It was fun. So let's move on. Now, a lot of news here. Media. Do you want to? We got to talk about Disney and Fox here, and this plays into Star Wars. Disney bought a bunch of Fox, not all of Fox. I think you can't buy the Fox Network if you're ABC Disney,
right?
Because they already own ABC, so they had to. Fox will own Fox.
But how do they
News
own the Simpsons?
Channel? Because 20th Century Fox produces it. They bought the television production division. And they bought the regional sports channels, but not.
But
basically,
you,
they
you
didn't
can't
own,
actually own the network.
But basically, because they own ESPN, a national network, they can't own Fox National Sports. Or anyway, Fox is keeping the national sports, but the local sports, like Fox Sports Detroit, is going to become an ESPN Detroit station and have the local games. So, all kind of stuff like that. For our nerdy fans, the X-Men. Which the rights were held for those films by Fox are now going to be under the same umbrella as the current Marvel production. So you can see the X-Men, which should inject a little bit of life anyway into Marvel if they're slipping.
How many? Okay, with the X-Men, I think we've had enough.
We've had enough of a mouthful of Cheetos.
I know.
It's okay. I can talk while you're eating Cheetos.
I'm just saying, like,
there's 8 X-Men's at this point or something.
So
it's
now,
ridiculous.
So now there's another X-Men movie that Fox has made.
Yeah. Yeah. It's coming out, what, next year or something?
Right. There's actually two. There's New Mutants, which they made kind of into a horror movie.
Okay.
It's got Maisie Williams in it.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that in front
but those
of
are like,
or something. Yeah.
In the comics, the New Mutants are like the younger class of X-Men.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're the students.
Yeah.
And they made that one. Oh, hey. Joel just whapped himself with the mic.
Thank God for the windscreen, or I would have chipped a tooth, I think.
But anyway, so they've got the New Mutants coming out, which is... It looks kind of interesting. They did it like a horror movie.
Okay.
But then they've got Dark Phoenix, which is the next X-Men movie.
Mm-hmm.
And people are kind of like, well, why even bother with that?
Yeah.
Like, just...
Yeah, I've seen a few of those X-Men. Some I liked better than others. I don't know. At this point, all the superhero stuff is just... It's all becoming one big mass of things. I don't know. Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which I saw recently on Blu-ray, I thought was entertaining, and Thor was all right. Probably mostly because of Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, they could X-Men could use a shot in the arm. I mean, that Spider-Man sucked,
well,
but,
that was
you
my,
know.
That was, that was my favorite line on Master of None.
Yeah.
Is they were real hot to go see the X-Men movie.
Yeah.
And they came out of it, and they were like, you know, of the 9 or 10 X-Men movies I've seen, that was like the fifth best.
So anyway, they're going to get that. And they also will have the rights now to the first Star Wars, which Fox had always owned the distribution for that. And I think there was probably some holdup in...
A New Hope or the...
A New Hope. No, the New Hope only. Because what happened was George Lucas produced all of these Star Wars movies except the first one. Mm-hmm. He did that with Fox. And then he got a big loan to make Empire Strikes Back because he didn't want Fox. Because as long as he was using Fox's money, Fox could say what they wanted and didn't want. And Lucas didn't want them meddling. So Lucas, you'd think Lucas had all the money. But in 79, when he started making that thing, or 78, he actually didn't have all the money yet. Because all that merchandise thing would come in later. So he had to go get a giant bank loan.
Yeah.
This is all in that Making of Star Wars, Making of Empire books, which are fantastic, by the way.
But he retained the merchandising rights.
But because he owned, he retained the merchandise rights. But since he produced those were all, Lucasfilm had all the rights to those. And when Disney bought Lucasfilm, they got the rights to Empire and Jedi. But when to release these movies on DVD and Blu-ray and all that stuff, they still needed Fox's cooperation. And I think that has held up putting out the original cuts and things, and my guess is that we will see those now, and this hastens that, so good on that. I think that's a good thing. The Simpsons now goes to Fox. That's interesting. I'm trying to look at these articles and see what else they own out of this thing. It's a giant list.
But they did have to split the Fox News.
Yeah, Fox News and Fox Sports are going to stay with the Fox company. They now own the Avatar series, which...
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And you know they're going to milk that.
Yeah. And they also own a big now hunk of Hulu, where they owned a third. They now own 2/3, it seems like, or each company owned 30%. Comcast owns 30, and Time Warner has 10. So it's... But Disney was going to do their own streaming thing, so I don't know what that means for Hulu. I'm reading this article, but I can't. I don't have time to.
Well, you
process
I know Disney's going to still.
But there's a Mashable article.
Well, here's what's
about.
Annoying about this.
Yeah,
Disney's going to still push ahead and do their own streaming service.
It sounds like it,
which is going to be stupid.
Okay.
Okay, I know the fanboys are all like, "Ooh, we're going to finally see Wolverine and Iron Man in the same movie."
Yeah,
and they're all excited about that.
Yeah,
because they're. Sexless humps. They're a bunch of Redditors. They're a bunch of douche nozzles.
Oh, boy.
What?
Keep going.
No, the comic fandom is amazing in many regards.
It is.
Because there's good and bad on multiple levels, but they're always mad about something.
Yeah.
The nerd fans are mad about something. And we'll delve into their Star Wars rage.
But I think the Star Wars stuff is a little different because there isn't this legacy of comics. The source material is not anything that pre-existed.
There's 40 years of Star Wars stuff, though.
Well, but Disney also said that none of that counts. None of that's canon.
Yeah,
so. Anyway, keep going.
They're arguing about all that.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, the nerds are all... That's all the stories have been about, like, well, what does this mean for Submariner? Are they going to make a movie of that? Is that Universal still have those rights? Or the Fantastic Four? Can we make a good Fantastic Four movie finally?
Yeah.
And all this shit. And I'm sitting here going, guys, this is a terrible deal.
Yeah.
This, I know that Rupert Murdoch is doing this deal because he doesn't, he's seeing the end of the tunnel here.
I'm not sure what the deal is other than, I don't know. I don't know what Fox gets out of it other than Disney needed Fox. I mean, they really do in a sense.
Yeah.
They really do want to own that first Star Wars. They really want to do own X-Men and that stuff. And I guess this was the way to get it. I mean, that's the best. Or Disney's like, we want to own everything. So yeah, if you're gonna if your shit's for sale, we'll buy it. You have shit people like,
but,
we'll buy
but
it.
But it's just it's not good for anybody when
no,
you have that much consolidation.
Yeah, absolutely, it's
and that much power.
News.
Look at like Hulu, okay, which was considered was started as this kind of weird collaborative process, through which the broadcast networks would have an internet foothold.
Yeah,
and Hulu initially was really just all free.
Yeah,
and you could just go online and watch episodes of all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And the weirdness of Hulu will be drained out of it.
Yeah.
Hulu used to have crazy, it had the Criterion Collection at one point. It had like all these Criterion movies on it. It was really a great service, although never one that was coherent because you had multi-parties involved in it.
Well, it's in its own way eating television and some in some level because it's sort of the alternative to getting a cable thing is well if you just get Hulu you get all those shows but
you,
at the same time though when you owned a hunk of it you're at least getting that money basically Hulu was a way for them to say hey don't steal our shit here we're gonna stream it for you and we're gonna put some commercials on it and then Hulu went to well we can get it without commercials. So Hulu has evolved in a way.
But now Hulu's making its own content.
But, yeah,
and,
but I...
Okay, here's the bummer for me, is I think when Disney owns it, that's going to change that content.
Yeah.
They already canceled Difficult People, which was a funny show, I thought. It was Julie Klauster and Billy Eichner. And that was a really funny show. And a show that was really, like, mean about Hollywood.
Yeah.
It was basically the two of them running around being miserable jerks. That were mad at everybody for their careers failing, and so they would just make constant jokes about everybody, including Woody Allen and Harvey Firestein and all these guys that are now creeps.
Harvey
Weinstein. Excuse me, Harvey Firestein.
Hey, I'm still the lovable fag I've always been. God, that hurt my voice to even do.
You
it.
Didn't. Harvey Firestein. What did I do to hurt you? Anyway, remember when he was a big deal? That could have been the worst thing that happened to the gay community.
Is
like,
it was Harvey Firestein?
Yeah, was it just like when he was like the big prototype for the whole. Like,
well, he is the
gay market.
He's
it was
not.
So, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I
there
know.
There could have been a guy that was less ridiculously.
Well, I mean,
Foppy that could have been a big star.
You know, you want Nathan Lane? I mean, is that the replacement? I don't know.
But anyway, we all love Harvey.
Bruce Valanche, who do you want?
Mario Cantone.
Mario
Cantone.
Nothing stereotypical about Mario fucking Cantone.
Never mind.
All right.
No, okay.
I see where you were trying to go. It was hard to get there.
Yeah.
You have not proved your point, counselor. You have not proved the case beyond a reasonable doubt.
But anyway, but I'm just saying, and then they have Handmaid's Tale, and they have kind of these high quality kind of edgy shows. And you just worry about what Disney does to everything, which is Disney-fy it.
The smart thing about Hulu, and we'll throw Netflix in here, in making their original content is if these networks decide to jump ship, you know, and that's what happened with Netflix. You know, Netflix, you know, they had way more diverse range of, you know, companies giving them their content or supplying them with content. And now when people are taking it to other services, Netflix is like, well, we got these originals. And I think Hulu's looking at it the same way. Hulu's like, well, we better start making originals because, you know, Fox is out of it. So, you know, I mean, granted, Fox goes to, you know, Disney gets Fox, and that shouldn't really stop Fox from being on there. But there's a potential for somebody to go, yeah, we're going to put our stuff on this now. So at least they've got their originals. So
I think we've already seen the golden age of streaming.
Oh, yeah.
Because for a couple years here, for the last 3 or 4 years, if you got Netflix and Hulu, you could cut your cable and get everything.
Yeah.
Almost everything. You'd get a large amount of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you throw in Amazon on top of that,
right,
and you've got all this other nonsense. But now they're going to all be in this little competitive circle jerk about who gets what and the rights to what. And now that Fox and Disney are merging, you have even one less player, so you've got more power. I'm personally... I know that there's been some talk in Congress about looking into this deal.
Yeah.
There's also been some pushback about the FCC. Probably nothing's going to happen until the elections next year.
It's not the broadcast. And that's exactly why the Fox Network isn't. They haven't touched broadcast. The FCC only controls broadcast.
Yeah.
They also
I'm talking about in terms of the net neutrality.
They can regulate, you know, these streaming content providers. But I don't believe any of them own any pipes into the home. Like NBC Universal is Comcast.
Comcast does, yeah.
So Comcast does, but I don't believe ABC.
Well, who owns AT&T?
Well, AT&T tried to merge with Time Warner, and they shut it down.
Right.
But I don't believe this Fox-Disney thing is any sort of internet pipe delivery system
But the problem is...
It's just content creation.
This is always the issue for me. Unfettered capitalism resembles communism.
Yeah.
In the fact where you're going to get two choices instead of 13. And the 13 choices is just better for consumers.
Well, but you could also argue that Netflix came out of nowhere to be this giant player.
Yes.
And so maybe
Disney's,
could emerge. And...
Now, you can go on right now and all the Doctor Strange and all the Marvel movies are on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Well, say goodbye to that.
Yeah.
That's going to come right off and it's going to go on whatever platform Disney controls. A lifelong trekker,
yeah.
A from the cradle, a Star
Trek
fan.
Thing.
No, I'm just saying. But remember when we were kids, the Star Trek reruns were on all the time.
They were, yeah.
And when you're a kid, you're gonna watch that every time and go, ooh, spaceships.
What if I want to watch old Star Trek? Who's got those?
Those are on all the services currently.
Oh, okay, cool.
Like Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon. Right. I think all have all the Star Treks.
Interesting.
But we'll see what happens with that. Because then Paramount's going to be like, we want our own. I think CBS currently owns
Paramount. It's Viacom,
right?
Yeah, it's Viacom.
Well, because
CBS, Paramount, Viacom.
Well, actually, you know what? The Trek rights are split into two camps.
Oh.
The current movie series.
Ow!
Yeah, let's just do Harvey. Let's do the rest of the show as Harvey Firestein. But the Chris Pine...
okay.
You know, that the Carl Urban Chris Pine version of Star Trek, I believe that those rights are separate from the original series and all the Paramount shows. So I think that's why they changed things a little bit in that universe.
But CBS is... But those are Paramount, though, aren't they?
See, it's a you got to be a practicing attorney. You got to be like a
I don't know anything.
You got to be an IP attorney. You gotta be
Would have thought if Okay, but if you're saying Roddenberry had the rights and then went to Paramount to make those movies, but since Paramount and CBS are the same company, they should be the
I
same.
I think there's...
They could have been separate for a while, but
I think
when
like
Viacom
two,
merged...
Because there was a lot of nerd argument over the new Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
As to whether it was part of the... Due to the trademarking, whether it was actually part of the original... TV universe.
Oh, I got
or
you.
If it was part of the, if it was, you know what I'm saying? That the license,
explode.
I'm just saying, like, the license for the movies is a different license.
I get what you're
and
saying.
The license
yeah.
for the TV shows. So does this occur in the original Prime timeline or the Kelvin timeline, which is the movies? This is what nerds do, right?
I'm out.
Yeah, exactly.
This is where I go. Who gives a shit?
But the nerds fight, and by the way, I'm going to get into a Star Trek nerd fight
well,
that will blow your
me
mind
about
how
that,
stupid.
That's the next thing on my agenda here. You're on Facebook, right, and what happened?
So there's a group, there's a podcast I listen to called The Greatest Generation, where these guys review Star Trek episodes. Mm-hmm. They reviewed every episode of The Next Generation, and now they're on to Deep Space Nine.
Okay,
and it's a funny show, and I enjoy it, and you know, so that Facebook page, is you know all the little nerds in there sharing their Star Trek stuff, mm-hmm. and a girl gets in there and she says, and it was a woman, she says. You know, I just kind of noticed that, Brian Bonsall, who plays Worf's son, is like a little blonde kid that's wearing brown makeup. And I just don't know if I feel comfortable about that.
Oh, boy.
And this led to a gigantic fight. And it was primarily logic won out. Primarily the smart people were like, they're fucking Klingons, stupid. But this was literally an argument.
So are Klingons black people or white people? Is that the argument?
So Michael Dorn, who plays Worf, is a black guy.
Yeah.
Some of the actors who play Klingons are black guys.
Well, wasn't...
But the Klingons themselves have always had, like, brown skin.
Well, Khan was Hispanic.
Khan's not a Klingon.
Oh, Khan was a... Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Khan wasn't
okay.
a Klingon.
Like, Christopher Lloyd was a Klingon.
Who were
the
Klingons?
The
Who are the famous actors that play Klingons? Christopher Lloyd,
Michael
Dorf.
Michael Dorn, yeah.
Michael Dorn.
But I'm just saying, like, sometimes Dorf. There's black guys that are Klingons, and some... and. But overall,
yeah.
all Klingons have kind of a dark complexion.
Interesting.
Right? Or like a brownish complexion.
I don't know.
And this is like literally an argument that they're having.
And Brian Bonsall is a...
He was Worf's son. They had a little boy at Klingon running around.
But he's white.
Which is stupid. Yeah, everybody hated that, by the way, when that happened. but it's like they're arguing over, is this blackface?
Yeah.
Because even on the old show, they would be like white guys with beards and kind of dark brownish complexion.
Right.
And they'd paint them black, but they were usually...
But I think they were dark only to separate them from the human.
Yeah, they were...
That was like, it was a visual thing, not a race thing.
Because they're another fucking species.
Yeah, right.
It's an alien...
It's like making green aliens or something. It's not that different from that.
And then there was the argument about, well, is this green face when someone plays, you know, or blue face or whatever the fuck. Because people are out of their fucking minds.
Yeah, that is a stupid argument.
And I was like, that is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard someone say.
Well...
And that literally had to have that argument. Yeah. Like, we've lost... Okay. We're not... Okay. If the Klingons were like, well, howdy there, Captain Kirk. You know what I mean? If the Klingons were like... It's not like it's a minstrel
show.
It's
not show. Yeah.
It's like,
like,
hey, look at this alien race that talks like Amos and Andy.
Right.
It's not that. Yeah. It's they're just an alien race with big foreheads that are like... warriors, and they have dark skin because they're aliens.
They're sort of Mongols, in a sense, right?
Yeah,
they're sort of like primitive at some level.
They're a little bit...
less evolved.
They're just warriors. Yeah. They're just angry all the time.
They're an angry race.
They're a little bit... Their culture's
tribal.
Their culture's a little bit Russian and a little bit Japanese and a little bit... But it's not any one... It's a made-up fucking thing.
Mongol.
Yeah, yeah,
right
Mongols.
In the middle.
They're in there, sure.
Right in the middle.
That's yeah, that's
Japan
part,
and
but
Russia,
it's not like any
China,
one thing.
Yeah,
they're
yeah,
like
sure,
all
yeah,
part
yeah.
of a
yeah.
little aspect
but,
of this.
But to draw a comparison to the real world, then you would say, yeah, that's it. They're
very kind of samurai-ish,
yeah,
where they're about
sort
honor
of an
and clans
race
and stuff.
Of warriors.
Yeah,
jeez.
But it's a made up thing, and I had to have a conversation with adult people that have attached garages, and 30-year fixed-rate mortgages about, like, whether or not the Klingons were brown-faced. And I just went, we've lost our minds.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to get, I don't want to get all, you know, Adam Carolla here because I think he's out of his, he's too far to the right now. But it's, like, some of this, like, hypersensitivity to racial issues.
Yeah.
Seems very similar to racism.
Well, yeah, I mean, you definitely forced diversity often feels like it is tokenism, and tokenism is bad.
But okay, so it's like bigots are.
I mean, you say the same thing about Star Wars.
Bigots are obsessed with. Well, he's an Octoroon. He's got one drop of colored blood.
Yeah,
and like that's idiocy of the highest order. And then there's really well intentioned social justice warriors that are like. Well, I don't know if they're not... Okay, he's Korean and he's playing a Chinese part.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's called fucking actors.
Or just, like, you better have an Asian in this group.
Well, sure.
Or else, you know, you better have a black guy, you
well,
better have a
that's
woman.
Been,
you better have an LGBT representation in this.
Well, that
that's like,
started in earnest probably 30 years ago of, like, the one black friend on a sitcom.
Yeah.
Which is, of course, exactly how everybody in real life operates.
And Star Trek did a lot of that. Diversity thing
well,
before
yeah,
everybody else.
That, but Star Trek, okay.
And it was refreshing when they did it.
Sure. Well, okay, but that was just always that Star Trek was, that was how they always.
A black lady, a Japanese guy,
whenever,
a Russian.
And
know?
Whenever you get upset about, that's the funny thing. Now there's guys arguing over diversity in Star Trek. And I'm like, that's the whole fucking point of the show.
It is.
And then, you know what else they have on that show? Aliens.
Yeah.
They have robots. Yeah. They have people that don't exist.
Right. Yes.
And you're fucking arguing over whether a Klingon is brown face.
Yeah.
You complete morons.
We don't have racial harmony, nor do we have cloaking devices for spaceships.
Right.
Neither of those things really exist in the real world, but in the future, in fiction, we can create these things. Yeah, it's so stupid.
This is so when nerds are getting, and then believe me, the Star Trek nerds are not as bad as the Star Wars nerds.
Yeah, well,
I think those are bigger nerd factions, and so all these guys are jizzing all over their keyboards, blowing their minds up over this Fox Disney merger. And I'm looking at it going, this is an antitrust case. And if this had tried to happen under the, like you said,
I don't know that it is.
The AT&T Time Warner merger didn't happen.
Yes.
This one is bordering on maybe this shouldn't happen.
The FCC does not, again, you're talking about content creation, and that is different than the rules about broadcasting and distribution. And that's what the FCC can cover. And the government, it's free market, so it's hard to.
Yeah,
I mean, yes, this seems like this is a bad thing for consumers, and a, probably a bad thing for the employees. Because shit, man, you figure. I mean, you know, if Disney is distributing movies and Fox is distributing movies, well, the guy that works in the distribution arm of Fox might have just lost his job. And so there's that and that's negative. But I don't think the government can control this. I'm not asking for the government to step in here. I don't think that that's the case.
Well, I just think it is, from a logical perspective, kind of a bad deal for the public.
It probably is.
And it's going to make it, because
creatively, it's a bad deal.
All right. In the creative sense. In the old days of wrestling, when you had territories,
yeah,
you could work in, you know, world class in Texas, and then when you were kind of burned out there or you had a fight with the ownership, you could go work in Mid-South in Louisiana.
Okay.
Or, you know, Jim Crockett or whatever. You know what I mean? And now there's like, there are indies again, but for a little while, it was just WWE was like the big,
they were the big national thing, yes.
And so there's not, and then, you know, and you'd have guys going back and forth between WCW and WWF all the time. But this is what my concern is. Let's say you were a director and you were working and you did a project at Fox and Disney's like, we don't like that guy.
Yeah.
Well, you just lost one more place to pitch your product, your material.
Professional wrestling, the popularity when WCW and ECW closed, which both happened in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Professional wrestling in general lost a giant hunk of its audience. Right. And as a whole, for the wrestlers, it was bad for them to lose the competition.
Because there were fewer leagues.
However, it was good for WWE.
Sure.
And that's what this comes down to. This is a good deal for Disney. This is not a good deal for anyone else. And that is the wrestling analogy there. And I see your point. But
that's what I'm saying. Right. I don't think it's good for the consumer.
Well, speaking of not good.
Despite nerds going excitingly, ooh!
Speaking of not good, let's get an update here, because, you know, Ted Moss.
Oh.
I know, your favorite guy.
Speaking of not good for consumers.
him and Billy Reno decided to do their tour, and they got an RV, and they're actually on the road now. And I've not spoken to Ted, but he said, can we give you an update from the road? So I'm going to talk to Ted. Is there something you'd like to do in the meantime?
I'm going to get a cup of coffee.
Okay, you go ahead and get some coffee.
I'm going to try out this new mug.
Try out that mug, and I'm going to call Ted, and we'll see how they're doing out there. And because he says he's out there, let's give him a call. It's all right. You go ahead. Do what you got to do. Don't worry about it. No, it's fine. You're good. You sure you don't want to talk to Ted?
No.
Sorry.
I'm good.
We'll build the feud. Yeah. We're building the feud. We're going to blow this off at WrestleMania. Let's go to the phones. Let's see if we can get a hold of Ted and Billy. Go to the phones. Ted, are you there?
Yeah. How you doing, Joel?
Ted, he's on the road. Finally, the broke. What's the name of the tour exactly?
The Broken Road Comedy
Broken
Tour.
Broken Road Comedy Tour is actually happening. It's been, six weeks since we talked about this thing?
Right. We are live and well in Savannah, Georgia.
Savannah, Georgia. That's where that's where it's taking you.
Yeah, so far.
That sounds like a broken road.
It is. Well, the boat does kind of break as the water starts here.
All right, so Savannah, Georgia, how long have you been out?
What day, Billy? The 2 weeks tomorrow.
2 weeks tomorrow. That's Billy Reno. Hey, Billy, how you doing?
Yeah, he's in charge of all the technical stuff, like how many days.
All right, so 2 weeks.
I don't need to remember that.
Tomorrow, and you're out, you're doing shows. You sent me some photos last night from a gig. I guess that was in Savannah, right?
Yes, that was Savannah. That was Chuck's, which is a bar.
Yeah.
Advantage.
So is this bar open mics? Where have these gigs been? What towns? What have the shows been like?
Well, we started in Knoxville. And no, we didn't.
Nashville.
Before Nashville.
Louisville.
Louisville. We went to Louisville.
They're fighting already. Some southern town with a ville. All right, Louisville.
Yeah, we went to Louisville and drove 6.5 hours to get there, showed up 30 minutes too late. had about 20 people, and they wouldn't give us 2 minutes because we showed up too late. That was our first show.
Great start.
Yeah, so we acted very polite and clapped really loud, hoping at the end they would give us 2 minutes. And finally at the end, she says, "All right, we're all done. See y'all." And walked out. I thought,
wow.
Okay. So much. So, yeah, that was wonderful. But then we made our way into Nashville and did three shows in Nashville.
Okay.
And then we did two shows in Knoxville. Billy did three shows in Knoxville. I did two shows in Knoxville because I got a little cold going. And then we came down to Savannah and arrived yesterday, did a show last night.
All right. So it's been Knoxville, Nashville, Savannah, Louisville almost, or she let you two do.
Yeah. And then we drove through Asheville and Greenville just to make sure we hit all the Vills.
Yeah, please hit all the Vills. That's what we're looking for. Believe me, I've been in some of those Vills. I've played in Asheville. I've played in, where else have I played? Maybe Chattanooga, maybe not Knoxville.
Did you like any of the places down here?
I like some of those places. The gigs were I think, where did I play? I played in Wilmington, North Carolina. That was fun. That's on
the beach. I've been there. Yeah, that's out on the, that's just north of Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good place. But yeah, Asheville, I don't remember being very good. It was like a lounge by the airport. Asheville, nice town. Didn't see a whole lot of it because I was, stuck by the airport in a fucking Holiday Inn.
We have a tour bus going by us right now, taking photos of those, standing in the middle of a park. We're in Jingle Bell Park.
Okay.
And tourists are going by in a bus, taking photos of us, yelling into our telephone in the park.
You should tell them you're on the very important Joel Radio podcast, though.
They could be part of your podcast.
Now, let me ask you this.
Old Town Jolly.
All right. So how's the travel been? How's the RV? What's the lifestyle like? How are the, what's going on that way?
Well, the traveling's been great. It's been good. The first night we didn't have heat, thanks to somebody, we won't mention names.
And it was like 35, 40 degrees with no heat first night. So that was interesting.
Well, how do you have no heat in the, don't you test that before you leave?
You would think somebody would.
Oh. Yeah, well, it actually worked before we left home. But once we turned it on, it worked in a different way, which didn't work.
Oh, my God. All right, so have you spent every night in the RV?
Yes, other than the ones where Billy's just wandering around in the middle of the night aimlessly. Yes, we have.
Yeah, I don't sleep well, so I usually get up and walk around.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like from 2 to 4 in the morning kind of thing.
Whatever.
I don't know he's gone. I sleep so sound. I'm good.
All right. No, that's interesting. So, Billy, now would you have an easier time sleeping in a hotel, Billy, or is it just...
No, it's the same. That's
whatever.
Just how I sleep. I sleep for a few hours, and then I'm up for a few hours.
And who's doing the majority of the driving here?
I'm doing all the driving because I am me.
That doesn't trust... I don't think he doesn't trust me. He doesn't trust anybody driving.
Okay, now, but Billy, because I know I've been on long-haul trips going out with ICP and stuff, and I usually like to drive because I find that way less boring than just sitting there.
Oh, no, I get entertained with story after story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I've got 65 years of stories to tell, Billy. Where do you want me to start?
Oh,
and I don't
God.
Remember any of them, so it always starts with, did I tell you? And I'm like, probably, but tell me again.
Oh,
I
God.
Remember it.
So, all right. Now, what about the, you put up some photos, of course, like everyone. You put up photos of the really nice meal you had. Anything, you just eating garbage? You got a kitchen in that thing? You got a microwave? What are you doing for food?
Well, I'm eating decent food.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm eating smelly food, apparently.
Oh, see? That...
Billy made a homemade concoction of something that has a lot of fragrance to it, and that's been in the freezer. I can't hardly stand opening the freezer.
Well, what is it, Billy?
It's frozen, it smells, so I'm not sure what that is. Billy kind of dines on that, and I dine on whatever. I made beef stew in the RV one night, so that was good.
Oh. Billy, what are you eating that's stinking up the RV?
Ground turkey, brown rice, broccoli, carrots, cauliflower, garlic, and some basil.
So Billy's on a health kick now.
I'm not.
There's still every gas station or truck stop still has honey buns and
Yeah.
And ho-hos. I guess, actually, Joel, that's one of the most interesting things about this. The Bill used to be an over-the-road truck driver, so he knows a little bit about
this.
Oh,
okay, yeah, yeah.
I've never slept at a truck stop before, and apparently you can park and sleep there free every night, which we have a lot.
Okay.
And so I'm doing a lot of truck stop shitting, which is new to me. I haven't done a lot of that.
Have you done the truck stop shower yet?
No, I have not. You got to pay for those. We actually do Planet Fitness, and the showers are free.
Oh, so
Planet Fitness for $19 a month is great because you get to go in and clean up and shower, even if you don't work out. And they got massage beds you can lay on for which
okay.
we don't. Yeah. We've worked out a couple of times. I think Billy's worked out 3 or 4 times. I've worked out like twice or something.
Okay.
So that's a good place. No, it's a great Planet Fitness everywhere. They're nice facilities.
That is a good tip. Yeah.
But they're a long ways from. I mean, sometimes when you got to shit 5 times a day and you're at a truck stop, there's a lot to learn there too.
Who's shitting 5 times a day?
Well, we're on the road, dude.
Jeez. Don't drink so much coffee.
Yeah.
That'll stop that right there.
I know. You know, I'm getting used to it though. I'm thinking all I need is earplugs because I can blank out everything but the guy in the next stall.
Earplugs are a hot tip, man. Those are I use those when I travel. I use them at home sometimes to sleep.
Really?
Yeah, to sleep.
For when you're going to the bathroom?
Not for going to the bathroom, but whatever, you know.
I use them when Ted starts his stories.
Yeah, well, that would make sense. Now you earlier when we talked, you were talking about them when you were on the show, videos, and you had made a sort of a demo thing. I have seen nothing of videos. Maybe am I missing them? Am I not subscribed to the YouTube channel? What's going on? Where's this Road Diary video thing?
Well,
what's going
the thing
on
is, I got sick. I was actually wrapped up for like 3 days. And I do all the editing, and it's a lot of work to edit it. And I don't mind doing it. And we've got one that's almost ready for Nashville and Knoxville.
Hmm.
But I got to finish editing. And the other thing we run into is it's hard to find power.
Okay.
I can run the generator, but we got to get Wi-Fi someplace to get all the videos emailed into ourselves to do that. And it's hard to find a location where we can really set up the computer and do that. And you can't do all the editing from the RV. And the truck stops don't have good Wi-Fi, so it's hard to find a place. And you can only loiter in a coffee shop for so many hours, and they feel like you got to buy a coffee or something.
Well, what about a hotspot? Did you think of that?
Yeah. Do you know where the one in Savannah, Georgia? We've got to go there.
No. A hotspot meaning it's a little device you bring with you, and it gives you... cellular data, and some phones, you know, you can share your cell data. Again, is that great Wi-Fi, depending upon where you are? Maybe not, but, you know, when I traveled last week to New York City, I was on my phone data the whole time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was no problem.
So I get something, and I hook it to my phone, it's called a hotspot, and that'll give me Wi-Fi
Well, you can buy a little device, say, from Verizon, which is probably what you'd want is Verizon, because they seem to have the best.
Well, I have AT&T.
Now, okay, but still, you could still get this Verizon thing, or AT&T sells one, too. And then what you do is that would sort of create a Wi-Fi thing from the cell data, and then you could use that and just leave that in the van and turn that on, or in the RV, and then whatever devices want to hook up to the Wi-Fi... can just go ahead and do that.
So it uses my phone to connect to...
Actually,
Wi-Fi.
Your phone will do it as a hotspot. Some phones, some of the newer phones will use a hotspot. The other ones, or you just buy this standalone device.
Well, where do you buy these things?
Go to like the AT&T store or the Verizon store.
Okay, cool.
And you know, all they might have different deals. I don't think it's like very... I think it's somewhat expensive. If you already have a cell phone plan, it's going to probably it's probably going to be like a month of cell phone coverage, whatever that costs. So they're $50 or $60 a month, and this little device, and I don't know, maybe they rent them short term, something like that.
That's
a hot tip.
I'm sure all of your viewing or listening audience really cares about all this stuff.
A hot tip from your Uncle Joel. Well, if you're going on the road and you need data, just do it.
I know. That's good.
All right, so 2 weeks out.
Much more interesting than truck stop shitting, I'll tell you.
All right, 2 weeks out. What's the game plan going forward? How many weeks? What can we expect?
our next stop, we're going to go down to Jacksonville, and we're checking. We're going to check into our first
campsite.
Okay.
So we're actually stuff because we're going to stay down there for about 4 days because I really want to look at Jacksonville in that area and see what the town's like.
Okay.
And then we're going to head down the coast. We're going to end up. Jacksonville will be Christmas Eve, and so we'll have a decent place for Christmas Eve. And New Year's Eve, we're going to spend down in Key West.
Oh.
So we're going to be west of the coast. And Key West, they have a big celebration for New Year's Eve. They have the dropping of the shrew at midnight, so we're going to witness that.
They drop lots of things. The dropping of the trowel would be maybe a more appropriate celebration.
Yeah. And then we're going to come back up and be in Tampa for probably about 4 days on the way out of after New Year's Eve.
And comedy and, at all these places?
We're good. You know what? We've been very successful so far just looking it up just before we get there.
Yeah.
Showing up the open mics and meeting kind of the little comedy community in each town. Actually, the Knoxville community was really cool.
Yeah.
And we went to like three open mics and they were at every one and we kind of got to know the guys. So that was cool. Nashville was cool that way too.
So there's nothing you can promote to say, Ted and Billy are going to be in this town. So if you're a fan of this show and you live there, go see him. Can't do that.
Oh, hell no. No, hell no. We don't want
to. No. All right. Any girls? You meet any girls on this trip? Any women?
No. No, it's kind of funny you're asking that question. Just as you're asking that, we've got about people taking a tour of Jingle Bell Park, and all these elderly people are now listening to the podcast.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, no, so. No, there's, you know,
all right.
One of the,
so who's, there's people, who's jerking off in the RV? Who's jerking off, Ted or Billy? You guys helping each other out?
Dude,
how's Savannah going? Oh, see, you take me off speaker, didn't you, you fucker?
I did. I'm not kidding. Within 20 feet of me, there is at least a dozen people over the age of 70.
Well, that's why I did what I did. What can I tell you?
I know. Oh, I'm gonna have them all send you a letter.
Thank you.
And they're at it's almost like a yoga zen place, dude.
I bet it is.
And they're all kind of they're doing yoga and they're getting into the moment. They're identifying with trees and stuff.
Well, it's 11:30. It's almost dinner time for
man.
Them. So I don't know.
Oh man.
Hey, that's gonna be you soon.
It already is me, dude. That's why I'm here.
That's why you're here talking to me. All right. Well, yeah, Ted and
Billy is almost falling down laughing right now.
Of course he is. Probably the biggest laugh you got. It was me.
Yeah.
These stupid open mics you're doing. What's the worst open mic? Have you been to a real shitty open mic on the road yet?
Dude, they're actually hugging trees. Really, seriously.
Answer my question, Ted.
The worst one, we've been to one with this one. Actually, we've been to two where people had Godzilla masks on.
Okay.
Performing as Godzilla. One was reading through the mouth hole. The other one was kind of a hat. So that was kind of weird. There's been some people. Yeah, quite frankly, the quality of the comedy has not been good.
So Detroit has better comedy than these. So.
here comes Billy laughing. Just lost my. It's a terrible. We're just more advanced than the people at these things, I would say. Not unusual for us to have the best set there. And,
all right.
But you know, we haven't been smart about our timing. We've been showing up late. But we've met interesting people. And usually the host of the show is usually the best one.
Okay.
But they've been nice, and it's been an opportunity to perform in front of some people.
Are they impressed with you guys? Are they like, oh, my God, these Detroit comics are so funny?
Yeah. We're representing pretty well, I think. We've had a lot of people. You know, you can always tell if except for this moment right here, they're not impressed with Detroit comedy.
Yeah, right.
If all these people are, like, commuting with the trees. Dude, I've got to take a picture of this and send this to you.
Please do.
Okay.
Let me talk to Billy. Am I off speaker? Have I lost my speaker?
Yeah, you're off speaker.
I've completely lost my rights to speak.
Yeah,
in Savannah.
Yeah.
The idea is they'd arrest you in Savannah for this. That'd be great.
Oh, my God. Yeah. You know what? They're going to arrest you through my phone.
They ain't coming up. They ain't coming up here.
I thought you talked to Billy.
Let me talk to Billy.
Hey,
Billy.
Hey.
Yeah.
So this is what I want. I should have done this before you left, but we'll do it now because Ted can't hear. We're not on speaker because I'm an asshole. I'm going to give you a safe word. So the next time we talk, you just work this in somewhere into the conversation. That means I will arrange for a pickup. I will arrange to get you out of there. I'll airlift you like it's fucking the fall of Saigon.
Okay.
How's that sound?
That sounds good. Yeah, right, I might need it.
This is the code word, all right? Don't tell Ted.
Okay.
Ship Shawana.
Okay.
And you can work that in. Where are you going next, Billy? Oh, we're going to go over to Ship Shawana. There you go. If you say Ship Shawana, then we'll have an emergency response team in place to get you away from Ted.
Okay.
Because who knows what Ted's up to? Ted might be, you know, you hear all this sexual harassment stuff, and I don't want you to be one of those guys. You could be like the next Kevin Spacey on an RV.
Yeah.
Ted Moss.
That's the price I pay for fame, Joel.
All right. All right. Well, Billy, thank you so much. Ted, put me on speaker. I'll say goodbye for real.
Okay. Hold on.
I'm not going to fuck around. I swear. I promise. I'll be nice.
Oh, yeah, you're on speaker, but you got to be nice.
All right, I'll be nice. First of all, I want to apologize to the elderly population of Savannah, Georgia.
We are so far away from them.
If you old folks, to the old folks, may you have a solid bowel movement today. And no. All right.
And not at a truck stop.
All right. Bill, Ted and Billy, Broken Road Comedy Tour. Is there anything to go to see anything here, update?
Just follow us on Facebook. We'll be posting more.
There's
quickly.
A Facebook page for Broken Road Comedy.
Yeah,
I'll
Facebook
link to
page
it.
Called Broken Road Comedy.
I'll Tour. Link to it on JoelRadio.net. All right, thank you, Ted.
Right, thank you.
Thanks, Billy.
Right, thanks.
Later, guys.
All
more
right,
updates yeah, soon. I hope. All right.
All right. See
you. Goodbye. Here you go, Ted and Billy. Having a great time, it sounds like, right?
Well, that sounds like a hell of a tour.
Well, I mean, look, what do you want from me? I got to behave myself because you guys are in the middle of a park with old folks. Fuck you. I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe.
I'm surprised Ted wasn't out there doing Tai Chi.
Well, that's his future, I think, somewhere in the South. And that's his idea. You know, he's looking at places in Jacksonville to live. So good luck. I mean, maybe those two guys. Here's what I'm getting wrong, maybe, in the Ted and Billy thing. Uh-huh. Maybe those two, even though I would find it impossible to get along with either of them or you or anyone, for that matter. Significant other, probably, as well.
Yeah.
Maybe those two guys can actually have fun doing that.
Yeah. Okay.
Doing comedy for no money. I don't know. I don't think I can. So anyway.
Well,
look for that again. Broken Road Comedy Tour.
I don't think I've ever been on Facebook. I don't think I've ever been on the road more than like a couple days with anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe 3 days.
But you go on vacation with your wife and stuff.
That's my wife. That's a different thing.
But doesn't that even, don't you even reach a point with that where you go, okay.
No. No, it's my wife. She's home every day anyway.
No, but I mean, like, you eventually go, I want to be in a house. I want to be in my space. I don't want to be in RV.
Yeah,
I mean, that gets old.
Let's see. I moved Nigel Rosenblum, our former attorney.
Yeah.
I think
he's our current attorney.
Oh, yeah, probably still. out to...
Might need him if the residents of Savannah are mad at me for yelling about jerking off.
When Ted Moss files a lawsuit. the gang that couldn't shoot straight. Let me get this straight.
But what did you and Nigel do? You guys went across. I talked to you when you guys were doing that.
Yeah, remember? Yeah, because I missed an episode.
Me and Tenny talked to you.
Yeah, you had Janet in here when I wasn't
Janet.
Here. And Godspeed on that one.
Yeah. Should get an update from her.
Yo, I've hung out with
her. But you and Nigel were...
Yeah, we drove out to Seattle. So we were in the car for like 3 days. And then I was out there for another couple days in Seattle, like going to IKEA with him and buying furniture. And that gets a little claustrophobic after 5 or 6 days.
Yeah.
Particularly when you don't have anywhere you can go.
Right. You don't have any place to, you know, go like, how can I just fucking shut down or how can I... Yeah. Not be bothered by people or anyone. You know, it's a weird thing. I mean, there is the traveling thing.
It's different when you're...
And then there is the space thing.
When you're married, it's different.
Yeah.
There's no escape from that.
No.
You're just in that forever. And You know, you're just in that pocket.
Well, that's the deal you make.
Yeah.
That's the deal you make. All right, let's get into some TV movie stuff. Just real quick on, well, you mentioned Amazon streaming, and Amazon doing their originals. You know, they do their pilot season, and one that I checked out, which I'm going to recommend, is called Love You More, starring Bridget Everett. Do you know who Bridget Everett
yes,
is?
Yes, I am familiar with her.
She's an overweight, late cabaret singer slash comedian who I saw on the... what do you call that? What was the big comedy festival thing that toured for a few years? You know, where you'd see all the big stars of comedy on one stage.
The Ted Moss and Billy Reno.
No, that's not what it's called. The Broken Road Comedy Tour. No, it was the Funny or Die Tour.
Oh, it was the Funny or Die Tour.
No, it was the whatever that's called. I saw Bridget on that with Amy Schumer and Aziz and all those people. She was on there. I didn't really know who she was. She came out, did some songs, whipped her tits out. Yeah. It was fun.
You know,
it was a really great
show. Literally what Bridget Everett is doing.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, she's a brilliant genius. This is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing Rusty Warren's act from 60 years ago.
Or she's doing Bette Midler's act on some level, too.
Yeah.
But very bawdy, sexualized.
Rusty Warren had like... dirty party records in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
Her most famous one being Knockers Up.
Oh.
Which, like, everybody's grandparents had on their, like, you know what I mean? Like, you'd go through the pile. Actually, John Tenney has a copy of that record.
Okay.
And it was a party record. You know, much like Red Fox got famous with party records.
Yeah.
They would sell these, like, dirty records.
Uh-huh.
And they would sell millions of copies because... you couldn't get that stuff. It was kind of underground.
It wasn't on the radio or,
And Rusty Warren would sing songs like, Bounce Your Boobies!
Yeah.
And she basically was this big, ballsy, fat lady that would slap people with her boobs.
Okay.
That's what Bridget Everett does. It's the same archetype, same bit, really.
Well, this show is interesting.
She comes out and sexually harasses guys in the audience.
Yeah, it is. I mean, but like, literally, we're at DTE, you know, the big outdoor amphitheater here. Middle of the afternoon, and she's got her tits hanging out, jumping around all over stage.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy. So Bridget does this series. Now, I would say this is sort of it's her take on single girl in the city, kind of, you know, girls, whatever you want to say. The opening first 5 minutes of this, she picks up a guy in a bar and brings him home and fucks him. I won't ruin any of the, but it was funny. And you do see Bridget having sex and being nude. And then it gets into what she does for a living, which I thought was an interesting, boy, should I ruin that one or not? But it's really different for a television show. I'm going to tell you, if you don't want to know about Bridget Everett thing, because it's a pilot on Amazon. They haven't even made the season yet.
You can go ahead and spoil it.
She works at like a home for, mentally impaired people. So they have all these like Down syndrome actors. And she's like a caretaker in this home, and they're having all these Down syndrome people doing inappropriate stuff, which I thought was pretty funny. And I'm like, boy, how do you make that show? You know, that must have been a hell of a set, having all these Down syndrome guys on there. You know, there's like a Down syndrome lady that was in the first season of American Horror Story. You know the one I'm talking about? Do you remember her? They put her in stuff for me.
Okay.
She's in this.
All right.
You know. So that was funny, and then it sort of ended with a big musical number a la Flight of the Conchords, which I thought was well done, about she's bra shopping, and she has a whole song about that, which I guess is one of her famous, the girl that watched it with me is a fan, and she said it's one of her big songs from her live show, and they did sort of a Flight of the Conchords music video thing, all directed, didn't know this till it was over, by my friend Bobcat Goldthwait directed it, and it was well done, so.
I'm just calling him your friend's a little bit pushing it, but yes. You're,
as long as he's using my bit to end
true.
His show.
That's true, you're in his act.
You'll have to put up with me being your friend.
Yeah, that's right.
You ass. No, I love Bobcat, he's great. It was well done. You should check it out. Your wife
would
like
it. He has been dining out on your story.
I keep hearing reports about Bobcat's talking about you on stage. So anyway, I like Love You More. You should check it out. Your wife would dig it. Maybe just wait for the series if you don't want to watch the pilot.
Well, we
probably a year down the road or something.
I want to say Bridget is in this show. She's in a couple shows.
Yeah.
Where she's like, she was on Difficult People.
Okay.
But the show Amy likes that's nuts is Lady Dynamite. The Maria Bamford show.
Yeah, I've seen I saw some of the first season of that.
That
not
show is like, it's a half hour, and that's maybe 10 minutes more than you can handle.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like.
That Maria Bamford thing is weird.
It's so wacky and nuts, and some of it's really funny, but like, it's just, how did anyone give her a check to do this?
Well, it's that show, like Love You More is trying to be kind of grounded in reality until they
not
get into the
fluffy
categories.
Not one douse of reality.
No, Lady Dynamite's completely weird. And
Fred Melamed is her agent, and okay. He's very funny.
All right.
So he was in a world.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I what I saw Lady Dynamite I thought was all right. It just kind of wasn't for me. Love You More, I would check out.
It's a very acquired taste, but I would say Lady Dynamite is nobody's doing what Maria Bamford's doing, which is insanity.
Yeah.
You know, it's a sitcom-y bit about her life, but it's just weird.
How much of that touches, like, the weirdness of, like, Tim and Eric, which I don't like?
Yeah,
like,
you
is
know
it?
What?
I mean, are you getting to that point?
You're not quite there. You're on the edge of that, but I like Maria better than those guys.
But it's like it's not Curb Your Enthusiasm, but it's still sort
it's
of
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
It is, but
with
then it's
a mental
patient. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
It's really just like Maria is insane. And, I think it is very similar to that kind of. I don't really care for Eric Andre.
Yeah.
Or Tim and Eric. Mm-hmm. That Gonzo. Anti-comedy, I guess you call it, what it really is.
And even though, like, Nathan Fielder came out of that world, and I think he's awesome, so.
He's got a different approach.
We'll talk about him in a second. He's in a movie.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's strange that comedy has overlaps, and then people have their own styles and come out of things.
I'll tell you what. I don't like Eric Andre's talk show and his kind of spazzy shtick.
Yeah.
But I like him on, there's a show called Man Seeking Woman.
Hmm.
With Jay Baruchel,
okay,
which is I think is brilliantly.
Who runs that?
God damn! Which one? See, that's the problem. It's like which streaming service is that?
I don't even know.
I think that just wrapped up. It was like three seasons.
Oh,
but it's like such a. The premise of that is it's like, I can't even really describe it. It's like they do kind of sci-fi and fantasy premises.
Okay.
In the midst of a dating thing, like. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like he starts dating a girl and then these future women appear that are like, we will give you all the sex from the future.
Huh.
I can't really sell the premise of it well, but it's a very funny show.
Yeah. Okay. One more thing. Nathan Fielder. I don't think did I talk about the finale of that show? Because they gave him like 90 minutes to do a documentary. And it was so funny. And that's all I'm going to say about it. The season finale of Nathan Fielder, I think they did 7 episodes, is so amazing. That fucking guy is something else. Anyway, but he's in a movie. He's got a very small role in a thing called The Disaster Artist, starring James and Dave Franco, the Franco brothers, together, playing Tommy Wiseau and Greg, what the fuck his name is, the guy who was Tommy's buddy, made the movie The Room with
Burke
him.
Halter, Burke,
yeah.
Burke,
so I saw Disaster Artist at the theater the other night. Good movie. Franco, who directed this, did a nice job. It's one of those things. Let me just answer a couple of questions. Number one, if you've never seen The Room, you don't need to see The Room before you see Disaster Artist. And if you think, well, now I'm going to have to see The Room after I see Disaster Artist, and again, a very minor spoiler, you actually won't need to see The Room after you see Disaster Artist. They handled that very well. So here's what they do. I'm just going to put this out there. At the end, over the credits, you see the recreation of The Room and The Room side by side, and they did a great job recreating it. But Nathan Fielder plays one of the actors in The Room, so he's in there a little bit. Seth Rogen plays the script supervisor. Paul Scheer plays the cinematographer. I think if you didn't know The Room, you might find that James Franco is like, why is James Franco acting so weird? But Tommy Wiseau really is that weird, and Franco did a good job of playing him. You know, as a movie, it is sort of just like, it plays it pretty straight. It doesn't kind of veer off into fantasy. It's sort of trying to be, you know, a very by-the-numbers sort of biopic recreation of something that happened recently. And it's well done. I mean, it's weird seeing James and Dave, and they're not playing brothers.
Right.
And even though James and Dave kind of act the same, but I guess in this one, Dave gets to do the Franco bit. You know what I mean? Dave gets to act like, because I think Dave and James are kind of interchangeable in a sense. But then since James Franco is doing Tommy Wissow, Dave gets to do the Franco brother persona, in a sense.
James is clearly the top Franco.
He is the top Franco, yes.
Dave is the Shecky Franco.
Dave is, but maybe Dave the more handsome Franco.
I kind of more likable than James.
Maybe. Maybe they're the Afflecks.
Ooh.
Where Casey can be the more... more sort of critically acclaimed guy.
Right,
and then, although Ben has an Oscar for Argo, so who the fuck knows?
Yeah, Ben's a big director now.
But Ben also is more likely to be in schlock than Casey.
Yeah, boy, boy. My whole take on this, and we just did the
Well, Dave gets to fuck Alison Brie. So Dave wins. Dave wins. Dave wins. But Alison Brie's in this for a minute. There's a lot of everybody every actor that you see in this is famous.
Now hold on,
We
don't have a printout on where James Franco's dick's.
I'm sure James.
I mean, do we have
But just for the Alison Brie, we're fans.
Alison Brie is great.
We're fans, that's so
definitely top shelf. But I'm not gonna until I get a printout.
Oh, believe me, I'm sure James has knocked back some 2D right
left
and
those,
center.
Remember when they used to have like the big dot matrix printer with the like perforated edges
you
on?
You tear them off, yeah.
I want a big printout of James Franco's.
How long would that list be of who James Franco
12,
was fucked over?
12 here? Feet of paper on where James Franco's.
But James was on Freaks and Geeks, right, and all that stuff, so he could have knocked back any of them.
Probably had some busy Phillips in
there.
Yeah,
absolutely, why not?
Yeah, anyway.
But yeah, so it's well done. It's not like, oh my God, run out and see this movie. It's great. I know it got I think it got a Best Musical or Comedy Golden Globe, and Franco's getting, for his acting, is getting some...
I have not seen The Disaster Artist yet. I will probably see it in that I tend to like Franco and Rogan overall, their catalog. They're not all great, but I tend to like their stuff.
Well, him and Evan Goldberg produced this.
Yeah, so I tend to like Seth Rogen's stuff, Occasionally, he puts a stinker out like Green Hornet, but why wasn't James fucking Franco the Green Hornet? If you're going to make that anyway,
but you'll see. You know, Judd Apatow plays himself in this, or plays I guess he plays a movie producer that Tommy sort of confronts, and was a good scene. There's everybody, like every actor you see in this, you will know, like it's everybody from like Comedy Central and like cable television. Like there's a guy from Search Party that plays an agent.
Yeah,
Sharon Stone. Everybody's
all
famous.
Those guys.
Everybody's famous. In
all those guys are in there.
The actress that plays the actress from The Room is what's her name? She's on I'm Dying Up Here. She plays the Boozler-esque lady on I'm Dying Up Here. She's the sort of the female lead in The Room in this. I forget her name. But she's pretty good in this. It's all well done.
Okay, so we just did The Room on the riffing show that I'm on.
Yeah.
Cinema Rose Crunch, which our friend Brett Hayden runs.
Yeah.
And I'm one of the defending champions.
You are, yes.
So we did The Room recently, and I had fun doing the riffing on it.
Yeah.
And it gives you a lot to work with. I won that night because it gives you a lot to work with.
Uh-huh.
Because Tommy Wiseau has the weird accent, and just all the acting's terrible, and everybody kind of walks into a room, stops, and then turns and gives their line.
Yes,
in that movie, like they're just terrible acting.
And that's one of the best things is seeing how they shot those scenes.
There's like
so
repeated scenes of the guys throwing a football around.
That's a huge part
it's
of
like the least authentic like
disaster
football.
Artist.
Like
yes.
Joel and I have known each other for 15 years, never once thrown a football back and forth.
All of this is covered in. This covers everything you'd want to know.
Which is like if I went to France and was like, hey, I'm going to kick a soccer ball around just to see if
anyone...
And
you've never done it.
Do you know what I mean? It's just like, that's the most European thing I can think of. We're in Spain. But I will say, I will probably watch this, but I have a deep ambivalence towards Tommy Wiseau himself and his fame.
Yeah.
And I kind of hate the fanboy culture around Tommy Wiseau.
No, I do
It's
too.
One of those cases where I can't enjoy something because the fans of it make my skin crawl.
Well,
and it's Tommy Wiseau is like when I was in high school, we had a weird kid who wore a trench coat. I swear to God, he was Columbine before Columbine.
Yeah.
He wore a trench coat and a beret, and he had his whole locker was dedicated to the movie Highlander.
Okay.
He had a montage of like all the Highlander clips of Sean Connery and Christopher what the fuck is that? Lambert.
Yeah.
And he would walk around with a video camera and tape stuff. He was, you know what I mean? He was like every like 2000s movie weirdo cliche, like American Beauty, like he was filming leaves blowing and stuff.
He's Judd Nelson and
in
Breakfast
like,
Club. Yeah,
but like that guy had more attitude.
Yeah,
this guy was
yeah.
just kind of a weirdo. Jamin Fight was his name.
Yeah,
and one they decided to make him like they were like, wouldn't it be funny if we made him like a prom king?
Oh, geez.
Or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And suddenly he got popular his senior year. Like, he was this outer abject kind of weirdo that
yeah.
everybody was like, what's up with this dude?
Yeah.
And then as a goof, they all voted for him for prom king. And then he had about a 6-month run with the popular kids where he thought he was on top. And now,
boy,
he's
going deep into Corey's psyche.
No, I'm just saying. And now the guy hangs out. This is his job. He makes custom Leia slave bikinis.
All right.
I swear to God, that's what the guy does. And he goes to Comic Cons. And I he was a creep, and he literally had an SS uniform he wore for Halloween one time. Anyway, what I'm saying is I would not want to support that guy being popular, much
yeah.
like I don't support Tommy Wiseau's
well,
popularity, because there's an edge of okay. cynicism behind
Here's
it.
Here's the thing about Tommy Wiseau, though, I think maybe you appreciate this more after Disaster Artist, is the guy didn't set out, and this is the difference between him and a lot of other people, is that he did not set out to make a deliberately bad movie. He set out to make a great one, but had absolutely no talent for doing it.
Right.
So in a sense, he did put effort and money into making something that sucked, into something he thought would be great. It ended up sucking, but he also, there's a purity to his character. He is very consistent. In that, you know, but listen, all that stuff's in the movie. You do, at the end, see the midnight screenings of The Room, and you see the real Tommy was. It's all in there. There's a stinger. Stick around for that.
I know this sounds
weird.
I know this sounds weird coming from a guy that enjoys junk culture as much as I do.
Yeah.
But I do kind of feel creepy about making him a celebrity over people with talent.
It's.
And you know, that's how.
It's.
I think I'm fairly consistent on this issue, because when there's bad open micers, I don't like to support him.
Well, look, my feeling is there's
like Ted Moss.
There's plenty
and
of
Billy
room.
Reno
there's plenty of room
coming to a town in there's the mid south.
There's plenty of room for good filmmakers and bad filmmakers, and The Room can coexist with great movies, and it's fine. And interesting, they're throwing all of these talented people to recreate this bad movie, and I think that's interesting. So you'll like Disaster. It's a fun night out at the movies. You will have fun watching this movie.
I did like.
I guarantee that.
I did.
It is fun. Even if you don't like The Room, you'll have fun watching this.
I do love Ed Wood.
Yeah,
I think that's a great movie.
It's similar to that. You get similar tone to that.
Although I think Ed Wood was kind of sweet.
Yeah,
I don't know if Tommy Wiseau is.
It's you know what Tommy Wiseau. And it's funny, because I even researched a little Tommy Wiseau when I was done, you know, watching this, just to get a little more, even though I'd seen The Room years ago, just to see if there was some dark side thing about him that we didn't know, and it doesn't seem to be. I mean, I'm not saying it isn't, but there isn't, you know, it was, you know, he's just a weird guy. Apparently he made a bunch of money selling shit on the street, because in the movie there's a big thing about how does Tommy have all this money to rent, you know, he's like, I do not want to rent my equipment, I will buy film equipment. And they're like, well, you know, it's very hard to afford this film equipment. I would pay, you know. And it's like, where does money come from? And, you know, Seth Rogen goes and cashes his check. And he's like, is this check going to be good? And the guy at the bank's like, it's a bottomless pit of money or something. Like the guy at the bank.
Well, sometimes.
And, you know, he's just a guy who kind of hustled to make money.
Sometimes people have money that you wouldn't expect to fund extravagant boondoggles.
He's got a hustle.
Like the Ted and Billy comedy tour.
MC Sampler.
Yeah, exactly.
Making music videos. Where does that money come from?
Just money.
Making CDs.
And here's the thing. I have plenty of ideas and lots of things I could do creatively. And I don't have two nickels to rub.
All right.
But guys who couldn't fucking hit a ball off a tee are out there funding their own projects. Like Tommy Wiseau.
Well,
Ted Moss.
Respect the hustle.
Who's out there doing open mics in
respect
the South.
The hustle.
Oh, God.
All right, tell us about The Shape of Water. I know you saw that.
This is a new film by Guillermo del Toro, the director of such films as Pan's Labyrinth and Hellboy and Pacific Rim. It stars.
I liked a couple of those.
Yeah. kind of originally known as a horror film specialist, and he still kind of
a genre filmmaker.
He's definitely a genre filmmaker, but
giant robot movies, horror movies, action, superhero movies.
Yes, although
comic book movies.
But he's like the nerd of the Mexican director.
You're right, he's got that like, thing going too.
You know,
foreign film,
same generation as like Alfonso Cuarón, and like there's a little Mexican movement of directors, and he's peers with all those guys. But yeah, genre. He's a big nerd, is what he is.
Well, he's in the new Hideo Kojima video game, Death Stranding.
Okay,
he acts in that, and you can see the trailers. Death Stranding is now.
He's like the Mexican Kevin Smith, but with talent.
Yeah,
But I mean, or Peter Jackson,
right? He had a Peter Jackson before. Well, he was supposed to direct the Hobbit movies.
Yes,
and I don't know what happened, but Peter Jackson ended up doing it himself. He was going to produce them, and Guillermo was going to direct, but how is Shape of Water? A lot of Oscar buzz.
I would say, did you see Crimson Peak that came out last year?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'll say this. I was blown away.
Good.
I was not expecting it. Because Guillermo del Toro, I like his movies, but there's always something a little maybe lost in translation about them or something.
Okay, yeah.
But the script for Shape of Water is one of the best scripts in years.
Interesting.
It's a great script. It's got really memorable dialogue. It's got really, this movie is a gem. It actually works perfectly. What it's the basic setup is, it is like, what if the creature from the Black Lagoon was a magical realist fairy tale love story?
Okay.
Which only Guillermo del Toro could look at the creature from the Black Lagoon. Mm-hmm. And when he grabs the girl, see a love story.
Lady falls in love with a monster.
Yes.
Okay.
So Sally Hawkins is a, she's mute. She's got these scars on her neck.
Yeah.
But she works as a janitor at this weird government facility in Baltimore with her best, I'm trying, what's her name? From The Help and from Hidden Figures. Octavia Spencer.
Octavia Spencer.
So Octavia Spencer is her like pal who kind of speaks for her, and she lives in an apartment that's owned by Richard Jenkins, who's this like out of work illustrator.
Check all the boxes of Oscar bait.
I know, but you know what it is?
They're good actors.
They were like they got great actors.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
they're all you know what I mean. They're all killers. Richard Jenkins, Octavia Spencer, Sally Hawkins, and then Michael Shannon is the.
Check.
Right, exactly. Is the guy who's in charge of this project, and they and Michael Stolberg, who was in the
check.
There you go, right?
Every Scorsese movie and all kind of stuff.
Coen Brothers, you know, a serious man. So you just get this murderer's row of good actors, and it's a great movie. I don't want to say too much about it, but
I'm planning
on seeing
it.
They have discovered a creature, and it's in this facility.
Okay,
and she starts to have a connection with it. And
how different than a M. Night Shyamalan joint is this?
Wildly different.
Good, thank God.
No,
because it's starting to sound like that fucking thing where the lady was in the pool or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like that though.
Good, thank God.
What's interesting? This thing works.
Yeah,
because every shot is okay. There's a real emphasis on color, and like the color actually being a thematic part of the story.
Okay.
There's a lot of blue in this movie and teal and green.
His visuals are outstanding. And I mean, that's the best thing about like Pacific Rim
but
is
like,
the visuals.
Okay, like every... There's a part where they go to this pie shop, and the pie shop is this meticulously laid out like vision. It's set in the early 60s.
Okay.
Partly so that you can make people real racist. You know what I mean? Like, you can make real sexism and racism kind of stick up to highlight the themes. But it's beautifully done. There's a moment in this movie where it kind of they just go to the scene that I laughed at the audacity of it.
Yeah.
And the audience stuck with it. I could see people going laughing hysterically at how insane there's a sequence that's just nuts that goes. You're like, they're going there. They're doing this. And this is a brilliant movie. One of the best of the year.
Okay.
I was knocked on my ass and the audience loved it. I took my film groups. The old people liked it. The younger people liked it. There's it's a lot of sex that I did not expect to be in this movie.
Uh-huh.
You see, like the first 3 minutes, Sally Hawkins has got her clothes off.
Oh my God. I know. Slow down.
I'm just saying.
If you haven't seen Sales, if you haven't seen her,
I gotta say, that's a girl where you're like, okay, some girls, pretty face, average body.
Yeah.
This girl, average face. She's got a great butt.
Okay.
It's a classic pair of a butt.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway.
Well, I will comment when I've seen her butt, but until then.
No, but that
let's go to Mr. Skin.
Yeah, I know. That's not the top selling point
of
the film.
Let's get perverted.
I know, we will. But
we've done that too much.
Mr. Skin will be getting an update on this movie immediately.
Good.
But go see Shape of Water. Okay. It is like an adult weird fantasy, but it works. It really works. And this could have gone completely off the rails, and I'm sure some people will see it and hate it. But I got to say, most people are going to probably be swept up in this fantasy.
Okay.
It's a great movie.
All right, I'll have to check it. Because like I said, I'm trying to
see. And how often do I rave about movies?
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to see all these things that are Golden Globe nominated, ultimately. Because I try to see all the, if you've listened to the show, everything that's Oscar nominated in the major categories, including documentaries, which we'll get to one of those here. But and I think you reviewed this a couple weeks back, but I went out and saw, thinking of movies that everyone's loving and Oscar bait up the ass, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
Yes.
Went and took that in a couple afternoons ago at the Main Art Theater in Royal Oak, Michigan. And this movie is getting all kind of raves and Oscar nominations. Frances McDormand, Woody Harrelson, Sam Rockwell.
Oscar bait.
Exactly. Directed by a guy named Martin McDonagh, who I don't know how much Oscar play he's got.
Did you see In Bruges?
In Bruges, which was amazing. Yeah. Seven Psychopaths he made as well, which was a great movie. In a different kind of way. It was more of a genre picture than In Bruges, which was kind of a... Again, that thing was kind of a weird thriller, but a lot of comedy in that. Martin McDonagh is a real talented guy. And this thing, to me, here we go. We're going to check all the boxes. And everyone's loving it. And I went and saw this, and I have to tell you, probably the worst movie I've seen all year. I think I hated this movie. I'm pretty goddamn sure I hated this movie. Now I will tell you. Everything that I talked about, the aesthetics of this, the acting... the direction, the cinematography, all wonderful. They did a great job with it. The problem is there's absolutely no one to root for here. I hated the only person. I mean, you know, again, I'm not. I hate to be a guy who's like, well, I hated all these people and the movie sucks because these people are unlikable.
Yeah,
these people are really unlikable. This movie beats you over the head. It does have a message. Ultimately, you could say that this is a parable for modern times, and
yes, it is.
Everything that happens in Ebbing, Missouri is about what we're talking about going on in the world right now, and that's all true. This movie beat you over the head. Remember, I said Disaster Artist is a good night at the movies. This is a bad night at the movies. Do not go to see this movie. You will have a bad time. If you're having a great day, this will make your day worse. If you're having a bad day, you're going to want to fucking shoot yourself in the head.
You could not be more wrong.
This is a bad, bad, bad time. Don't go to this. Ultimately, movies are entertainment. And I'm not saying that you can't be educated in some movies and movies can't make you cry. But there is entertainment value in being educated by a good documentary. There is some entertainment in being moved emotionally. I'm not sure what the goddamn... Nothing in here was entertaining. This is a bad movie. It beats you over the head with its message. Everything you see is just awful. It's violent. The violent is unending. The violence and gloom in this is just everybody's an asshole. Why not just call this Five Assholes in Ebbing, Minnesota? This would have made way more sense to call it that. This is really one of the worst times I've had at the movies this year, if not ever. Skip this thing. I know you're going to look at the Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah. It goes really good. The audience Rotten Tomatoes is actually pretty bad. It's like mixed on this, like 56 versus 93 review. Skip this. It's Oscar bait. You're not going to like it. I talked about Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
We talked about stuff like Moonlight, and people get caught up in this Oscar bait stuff. You want to look at this and go, oh, it's a little Coen Brothers thing. It's like Nebraska. It's one of those little small town things. No, don't go to this. It's not charming.
This is the worst opinion you've had.
This is a bad
in
movie.
15 years.
And listen, I'm going to stand. Look, you can put 500 people and they'll all tell you that this movie's great.
Well,
but the thing is, okay, right now as we're recording, this is Wednesday. If you put 500 people in a room and tell me it's Thursday, it doesn't change the fact that it's fucking Wednesday, and it doesn't change the fact that this movie sucks. There you go, Corey. I turn over to you.
This is the worst opinion you've ever had. Honestly, you've never been more wrong.
This is a
great movie.
It's a bad movie.
It is a wonderful movie.
It's a bad night at the movies.
It is. Okay, you're correct in that it is not it's not like going and seeing Coco, okay? It's not a fun time at the movies. No.
And it doesn't have to be.
I will say this. And you know what? This movie is provocative. It's intentionally provocative, and it is probably kind of brazenly provocative in a way. But I will say I have not been more challenged or reward. Okay, The Lobster from last year pushed
yes.
a lot of buttons, right?
It did, yes. And I felt kind of the same way about The Lobster.
And I felt that The Lobster ultimately was not it fell apart and didn't work.
The Lobster, it was a swing and a miss.
Not that this movie, I can't really think of anything to compare this thing to. Because it is
Manchester by the Sea,
yeah.
I feel is similar, but in a way Manchester by the Sea was like, a lot of the things that happened to those characters seemed maybe more unfortunate, whereas this is all of their characters' creations, in a sense. Does that make sense?
Well, okay, so you've got the basic story.
Yes.
Is that Frances McDormand's daughter was raped and murdered.
Yeah.
And there has been no suspect.
Yeah.
Nothing has happened on the case. Mm-hmm. And so she decides to take out billboards on the edge of town.
Mm-hmm.
Calling out the sheriff for why there has not been any progress on the case.
Yes.
And Woody Harrelson's the sheriff, and Sam Rockwell is the deputy who's a nut job who's been abusive to, he's beaten up black people and other people and just kind of a wild cannon.
Yeah.
And so she takes billboards out and calls out the police department.
Yes.
And this causes a big turmoil, and everybody in the town kind of loses their mind.
And the movie's great to that point. That's a Norma Ray kind of small town story. I'm with you.
And that's all. And
if that's the movie, I'm in. But that's not the movie. That's the premise they set out. That's not how the execution, though. Keep going.
And I don't want to spoil it.
I don't want to spoil it either.
It does go in crazy directions.
It does, yes.
But that's the core of it.
There is a mystery element to this that they do, I guess, sort of resolve.
Well, okay.
I don't know.
So here's the thing. You're right. Frances McDormand's character is out of her mind.
Yeah.
She is relentless.
Yes.
She is basically the embodiment of wrath. She is going to take her revenge on everybody and just be a constant pain in the ass to everybody in town, and will force her way until she gets justice. And her character is not very likable, and it often is in the wrong.
Yes.
And so is Sam Rockwell's character.
Yes.
But the movie is about their arc towards understanding where the direction of their lives are going. And I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah.
Peter Dinklage is the one guy that you can like in the movie.
Well, I guess, Peter Dinklage is...
His character is
I liked Woody Harrelson in this movie in a way that was, he was conflicted. The acting's great. I mean, aesthetically, this movie is great. This movie feels like a movie that you should like that I would like.
Woody
checks
is the
all
sheriff,
the boxes.
Woody's
but,
the sheriff who's just trying to hold it all together.
Yeah.
I got to say... you're right. Okay. Would I recommend this to my in-laws? No.
No.
But if you're serious about film,
no.
If you like cinema, this is unlike pretty much anything I can think of.
Yeah.
It's not even like a Coen Brothers movie, really.
It's not. You think it's going to be a Coen Brothers
it
movie.
It does have... It is the darkest kind of comedy in that there are sometimes...
Oh, there's no comedy here.
There are times,
at the end of the day, there's no comedy.
There are times when the people are so fucking awful that you're forced to laugh in that there's no other way to go.
Yeah.
And I think it's a brilliant movie. It's not... Okay, I grappled with this because does a movie have to do everything I want it to do for it to be a good movie? Not necessarily.
No.
And so I would say you're right in saying it's not... but it's not... You know what?
But
this
people,
never bored me.
People are going to go because they hear that this is one of the best movies of the year. And my guess is that audience...
Do we talk
is
about
going to dislike this.
Did we talk about Wind River?
Yes, I saw Wind River. It
All
was
right.
great.
All right, now, see, I liked this way better than Wind River.
No, I did not.
But Wind River was also super bleak.
Yeah, it was.
But that didn't give you any kind of let
No,
up.
But
this has a little bit of a comedic vibe to it. I know you're saying it's not funny, but...
It ultimately isn't funny.
It's got a dark comedic streak. I mean, at one point, she kicks a kid in the nuts at a school. And I'm not even spoiling anything, because there's so much stuff in this movie. It is a wild, crazy ride. It is not.
I think ultimately, like me, you will be looking at your watch going, when will this shit end? I've seen enough. You're interested in sort of the mystery of it. You're interested in, will Frances McDormand get justice ultimately? Will they find out who did this? And then there's a point when you go, I don't give a shit. Get me away from this stuff because it's
awful.
It
does have.
Get me away from this violence.
Well, it does. The third act maybe doesn't pay off the way that it should.
But that thing about, you know, how much. I forget what the quote is, but I think it's the John Hawkes character that has sort of the quote that sums up the whole movie, where it's like how much violence begets other, or how much hatred gets other. And yeah, that's exactly what's happening in the world and in social media and in politics and all that stuff I get to. But that could be a fucking meme on the internet and sum up this whole movie to make people sit through 2 hours of this. I think most people are going to walk away from this and go, I didn't like this. And I think most people walked away from Manchester by the Sea and went like, I don't like this. And in Moonlight. Okay. And people, but there are people that are going to go like, I'm supposed to like this. So I guess I didn't get this, but they're all right. And I'm telling you, they're not all right. They're wrong. And you're right if you don't like this. And I didn't like this.
I'm standing up for, look.
And it's not about artists. We conventional railed movies. And you can sit there and go, well, it's not a fucking Pixar thing. I'm not expecting a fucking Pixar thing.
I railed against Moonlight. And I thought it was a bad choice for Best Picture.
Yes.
In that it's speaking about a lead character who's not really likable.
Yeah.
But I think everybody, it got the vote for, it checked the right boxes.
I enjoyed Moonlight more than this.
It checked.
And I didn't like Moonlight.
But Moonlight checked the right boxes of, it's about an African-American homosexual.
Yeah.
And so people went, well, that's an important story. This movie does not ask you to like anyone. Well, it doesn't ask you to. Oh, God. Think about Sam Rockwell's mother.
Yeah.
What a horrible wreck she is. And you know what? I don't normally go for this kind of thing. You know me, I will generally be like, I'll check out if it's excessively cruel or mean. Nah. This movie, I think, is absolutely worth your time.
It's a better movie in concept than in execution. I mean, again, there's nothing that they do aesthetically that's right. It's just the whole thing. You know, people.
Well, it's relentless, and you know what? It forces you into a decision more. It forces you in to deciding what side you're on or who.
It forced me into deciding. I literally thought about walking out of this movie. That's how much I dislike this.
Wow.
I literally thought about, I don't think I care about this anymore.
That's Joel's worst take ever.
When you don't care, isn't that the ultimate failure of a film is when you don't care? And when you don't care about Frances McDormand and you don't care about Sam Rockwell, what do you care about?
There's
nothing to hang your hat on and have any emotional investment in.
Oh, I was emotionally invested. I've seen lots of movies where I didn't care, or they were oblique and oppressive and I didn't want to go back. I mean, Manchester by the Sea, I'm never going to watch that again.
Yeah.
I mean, that was
You're never going to watch this again either.
Oh, I'll watch this again.
Oh, fuck you. You will.
Yeah, I will.
Fuck you. You will.
I will.
Did your wife see this?
Yeah, we saw it together.
Oh, jeez. Did she enjoy it?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck her. I mean, no. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Amy. No.
People
go into a setting and there's groupthink and there's mind melds that people have about films. And trust me, when you see this, you won't like it. Take my advice. Don't go to this movie. Go see Disaster Artist. You got two doors you can go in. You can go into Disaster Artist. You can go into this. Go into Disaster Artist. You can see both. You can see both. Okay.
Or you could take the opinion of a guy who worked professionally for years and years as a film critic and say that this is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is once a couple times a year, there are movies that are. I know most people go, hey, look, I don't have the time. I don't have the money. I just want to go and watch some, you know, I want to watch Rampage with Dwayne the Rock Johnson, and I want to watch a gorilla and a wolf tear down buildings.
The moral ambiguity of those
characters. That trailer is the worst looking trailer.
Okay, so your point is what?
My point is this. I am standing up for this as high-end cinema. This is artistic. Okay, now some people were like, Get Out is the best fucking movie of the year, and
no.
you can all suck my dick.
No.
And I thought Get Out's a fine film.
Yes.
But there's a difference between that and this in terms of some things are, I'm going to go snobby. This is the snobs film.
Yeah.
This is high-end cinema at its operating at its top peak, and so is Shape of Water. These are two great movies
you know what?
For very different reasons. I recommend Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, if you are up to the challenge. And I will say this is kind of like a strong... this is like a hot sauce.
Well, no, you're
it's a strong thing.
Thing is, I'm better than you.
No.
And not necessarily to me, but to anyone, that the people who feel like they're these cinephiles and they're going, hey, it's not for you, man, because you like Star Wars, you like Marvel, man, it's not that. And, you know, you can't handle this, it's about you. This, I like all that shit that you talk about. I went to film school. I fucking watched Jules and Jim. I wrote papers about fucking foreign films at New York University. And I sat through all this. This is not good. It's not good. It's a bad movie. It's not entertaining. You're going to hate yourself for seeing this. You will regret spending money to see this movie. That's my point. You will regret it. That's my point.
That's cuckoo nuts. This is a great movie.
It's not. It's not.
It's brilliantly acted.
Look, if you want to feel like you're going to get this because this is what the people that you think are cool like, and there's music that's like that people are into, this is that version of that movie.
But this doesn't conform to any... I liked Lady Bird, but you could make the argument that people are like, well, Lady Bird's good because I'm a Jezebel blogger and I enjoy.
Well, I haven't seen Lady Bird,
but
I'm
not trying to slam Lady Bird. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But Lady Bird is a more obvious kind of like, well, this is a hipster movie for hipsters.
Yeah,
Three Billboards is not written for anybody in particular.
Yeah,
it is Martin McDonagh's vision. As weird and fucked up as that vision is, it's a hard movie. It is.
And it's not like a true story or anything. It was apparently inspired by some real billboards that somebody put up, but the story itself is not in any reality. So you don't even have that going for you. It's just so bleak and awful that just don't go. Spare yourself.
I think it's
spare yourself. You're not missing anything. You're not missing anything.
Okay, now
this isn't a water cooler movie. This isn't anything that you're gonna have to see.
I hated the movie The Road. A lot of people were praised and thought it was great, and now Walking Dead is basically doing The Road. I hated The Road because
I didn't think
The Road. I thought The Road was unrelentingly bleak and didn't give you any hope.
But people said that about The Road.
I don't like Lars von Trier most of the time.
But this
is not that.
Somebody needs to tell people that may potentially go to this that there's a very good chance that you won't enjoy it, and I am that person. And I'm not saying I'm the loudest voice. Maybe I'm the first voice. Not a lot of people have seen this movie. Don't go to this, because I feel as Oscar season comes around, this is going to get more nominations and more buzz, and you're going to hear more and more about it, and you're going to want to go, and you shouldn't. Don't go. All right.
Okay, you're off. You're way off the mark on that.
No, I'm completely right.
It's a great movie. Go see it.
Don't see this. Trust me, don't see this.
Get toppings on your pizza and go see Three Ebbings, Three Billboards Outside of
Ebbing. All right, let's tell you about taking an Oscar bait. Oscar, they do the short list for documentaries. I try to see the nominated documentaries, but they whittle that down from a list of like 15. And some of those are on Netflix and Amazon, so I did check out one of those this week. Icarus, this is about cheating, blood doping, and the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I got to look up the guy who made this, because it's the guy... what's his name? Brian Fogel, I think his name is. He made Zootopia. Did you ever see that?
I'm trying to remember.
That was like a movie and a book. The guy's like a playwright, but he's like a comic by trade, which is so weird. Anyway, so basically in this movie, Brian decides, the movie starts out where like, he's an amateur cyclist. But he wants to figure out how he can win this like amateur, I forget what it's called, but there's an amateur Tour de France. And Brian's like, well, they're not drug testing, and I'm guessing all these guys are doing roids. And, you know, Brian's like in his 40s, and he goes, well, how can I win? So he finds this guy from UCLA, and he goes, can you tell me how to beat a drug test? I want to do, like, he's kind of doing that Morgan Spurlock thing where, like, I'm going to eat McDonald's for 30 days. He's like, I'm going to do steroids and win this bike race. Is that possible? How can I do that? How can I beat a drug test, whatever, if they decide to do it? So he hires this guy from UCLA. And then the guy from UCLA, who's, like, the head of, you know, drug testing, goes, I'm getting cold feet about this whole thing. I'm supposed to catch people using drugs. I'm not going to help you do drugs. So he goes, all right. And he says, well, who can I talk to? And he goes, well, the head of the Russian lab can help you. So he gets a hold of this guy, Russian guy, on Skype. And you see Brian training to run this bicycle race, and he goes to a doctor, an anti-aging doctor, who gives him testosterone, and you see Brian shooting himself up with roids and peeing into bottles. And so he gets this Russian guy, and the Russian guy goes, yeah, I can help you beat these drug tests because I helped the Russian athletes cheat at Sochi.
Mm-hmm.
And this revelation leads to, and it's in the news today, it was in the news this month,
yeah,
the complete unraveling of the Russian Olympic program.
Yeah, Russia's been banned from the Olympics.
And they're banned from the IOC. And it was largely the work of Brian Fogel. So you see the whole thing play out. The Russian scientist eventually, you know, he fingers Putin, which is why I think this will be an Oscar nominee.
You know, wait, hold on.
Because it's anti, yeah,
no,
I know.
That sounds really
gross.
Yeah,
he fingers Putin. I think he'd love to finger Putin.
Oh.
But, I mean, this goes to the highest levels of the Russian government. Of course, that guy eventually is fearing for his life. He has to escape Russia. It becomes a political, a spy movie, sort of. It's really crazy. I thought it was a little too long, but, you know, look, if you want to know how to, you know, and it really just makes you, at the end of the day, you just go, Jesus Christ, everybody's on drugs. This whole Olympics is on drugs. When you hear the testimony of these doctors who are there testing, they're like, yeah, everybody's on drugs. And they show you how they cheated in Sochi and how they swapped out samples and tampered with urine bottles. It's crazy the lengths that they went to. It's crazy how mad Putin is to try to win these medals. It's insane.
It's kind of interesting how the far left and the far right are both kind of going, what's the big deal with Russia? Why are we making Russia the bad guy, demonizing Russia? This Russian investigation, there's nothing to that. And then you go, oh, notice how they just got kicked out of the Olympics for cheating.
Yeah.
Like, this is kind of, it's, I know they're not directly related, but if you want to know how Putin operates or how the Russian, like, the mentality of the Russian system is, they don't operate under our rules.
They don't.
They don't care about cheating. They don't care about cheating in the Olympics. They don't care about cheating globally, financially. They don't care about our rules of war.
Yeah.
The Russians have an entirely different moral code. Let's just, you and I don't agree on Three Billboards versus Ebbing, Missouri.
Yeah.
They're as far apart as that.
Well,
they don't. The Russians don't operate the way we do it.
The thing about the Russians, though, and first of all, Putin is like a real like sports guy, and the head of the like state
he's
sponsored
a martial arts
sports
guy.
Thing is like his best friend. So the minister of sport is like his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that guy's dirty as all get out. But I think ultimately, though, I think one thing you do take away from the Russians, if you want to draw a parable to, but you also wonder how much like, and it's sort of in there, the movie hints at this, is like, how much was, because this scientist sort of defected to America, how much was Putin's election meddling having to do with the Olympics? It's very weird. It's the whole thing's tied in together. But the other thing you sort of like all they want to do is win. They don't have a side. They're not Republican, Democrat.
Right.
They're not pro-Trump, anti-Trump, anything.
Yeah.
They just want to win at all costs.
That's what I'm saying. They have
it's
completely different.
It's frightening what they try to do.
Well, by the way,
and
they're also hosting their World Cup.
Yeah. Well,
that's
brought up in the documentary too.
They're hosting the World Cup this year, which, you know, everybody's like, well, how do they? Which, and there's been a lot of arguing over whether that was a legitimate bid or if they bribed everybody.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, Putin himself and the Russian government and the Russian culture, basically, the whole ruling culture of Russia, you're right. They care about winning. They care about getting what they want.
At all costs.
And they don't have any notion our notions of democracy and fair play and all the things that we, even when we don't practice them, we at least pretend to give lip service to those notions.
Yeah.
And Russians don't give a shit.
I think the Americans cheat in their own way, but it's shocking what the Russians did to cheat.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's cheating, and then they took cheating to, you know, like, they were the winners of cheating. It's a really cool documentary. Again, is this a fun night of the movies? Maybe not. But, you know, I know, because of following wrestling and stuff like that in the NFL.
We all know Ivan Koloff was doping.
Well, not so much that. It's more like that, you know, guys are on roids. And
Nikolai
wrestlers
Volkov
are on roids,
was clearly on roids.
And it's funny, you do see the Russian national anthem performed in Sochi.
Yeah.
And it is the same song that that Nikolai would sing. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very funny. I was watching an old Survivor.
Bum, 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 bum.
I was watching Survivor Series 87. And it's funny, in today's political climate, you couldn't do this now. Jesse Ventura stands for the Russian national anthem and puts his hand over his heart. And I go, boy, you can't do this today, man. You can't do it now. So anyway, go check out Icarus. You know, it's on Netflix. It's probably going to be Oscar nominated.
Even when I was a kid and I was supposed to be rooting for the faces.
Yeah.
The Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov
put your hand over your
I always enjoyed that shtick. Yeah, I don't know what, you know
shtick.
What I mean? Like
it's classic shtick.
Because they'd come out and be like, Iran, number one. Russia, number one. USA.
Clearly. Yeah.
And he would come out and do that bit, and they would shit on the American flag and whatever.
Not a single, you know, the Japanese heels were almost all Hawaiian. Nikolai Volkov, I think, is by descent Romanian. Mm-hmm. Ivan Koloff's an American guy. Nikita Koloff's an American guy. Mr. Fuji's Hawaiian. I believe. Okay, Iron Sheik was from Iran, but he actually represented the U.S., the United States in like the Olympics and stuff. So.
He's legitimately Iranian. Though.
He's from Iran by descent, but
wasn't he like a
he's an American
for
citizen.
The Shah and stuff.
But he was an American citizen at some point too. So mm-hmm. Sheik was sort of a shtick. But yeah, all right. So the only things left is Star Wars. I will do.
And
Star Wars stuff.
The Sheik before him, Ed Farhad.
The Sheik
was from Detroit.
Yeah, but he's
Lebanese or something.
Lebanese, yeah. So all we got left is Star Wars. Now look, here's the thing. Here's the news coming out of Star Wars today that I read. The the grosses are down for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought that? Here it is. The Last Jedi's first Monday receipts are half as much as Force Awakens. Last Jedi took home $21.5 million on Monday, but 2 years ago, Force Awakens reaped over $40 million on its first Monday. There's a feeling that Jedi is soft at the box office. I don't know why. It's just as good, if not better, and his major plot development. Okay, this is Roger Friedman from Showbiz 401. So his editorializing I don't agree with, but I think there is definitely a negative buzz on this, which is... I'm not surprised, but the amount of pushback. I mean, the nerds are going nuts about this, Corey. How many YouTube? I mean, I've been sitting around.
Oh, it's all over
the
YouTube.
I literally put on one and like I get up to take a whiz and like they're auto playing all these Last Jedi sucks.
Well,
stuff,
it's not just that. It's like everything. So, you know, your YouTube curates your feed.
It does.
Of like if you watch a wrestling video, you'll get 10 wrestling videos. If you watch a politics video, you'll get all those. This is like. If you watch video games, if you watch movie stuff, all those guys have opinions on the new Star Wars. Yeah. And so there's just dozens of videos streaming all over
the place. It's unbelievable the amount of lip service that this getting. Blogs. I mean, there are people that I see defending Last Jedi and going, well, they took it in different directions. It was good. I mean, there are spoilers for Last Jedi. Let's get into them. I mean, they're saying a lot of people.
The big issue here is that the critic on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
The critics have it at 93%, which makes it the second highest, just behind Empire.
Yeah.
Highest rated Star Wars movie ever. And the audience has it at 54, which is a failing grade.
You know, Three Billboards?
I know. That's
same
probably
breakdown.
A big gap there.
Same breakdown. Yeah. Actually, Three Billboards has only a handful of negatives, but the negatives are super negative. You know what I mean? It's like it's tens or twos. There's no fives and sixes for Three Billboards.
Well, it's
so,
a polarizing movie.
Yeah, it's polarizing.
And I would never
Last Jedi,
disagree about that.
Last Jedi.
This says 87% audience score on Three Billboards.
Well, when I saw it was 56.
I think.
Oh, you know what? It might be Metacritic. It might be Metacritic, not Rotten Tomatoes. But anyway. But I mean, Last Jedi, as much as you and I, the problems that we both had with Last Jedi that we talked about last week. And by the way, if you didn't listen to that, the full Last Jedi review is posted on JewelRadio.net. Go get that or on your podcast feed because we talked about that last week at length right after we saw it. Before all of this backlash happened. But, you know, the Casino Planet, the Snoke stuff, the Luke stuff not making sense or wasn't in character.
I've learned that the name
Ray's parents, all that stuff has become really a hot button issue. Yeah.
I've learned that the name of that planet is Canto Bight.
Well,
but I did not know that during the movie.
Yeah, they say it at one point. But my God, and you know, I've read that, you know, when Mark Hamill read the original script, Mark Hamill had problems with what they did with Luke. And Luke
there's
gave
videos
some,
of that.
Yeah.
They're like,
and Hamill gave some input that they did make changes in Luke.
Hamill has
based
not,
upon
like,
Hamill.
No, he that. Seems to be kind of annoyed at all of the press.
Does he? Yeah.
Because there's like people who put clip reels together of him like hating the whole thing and
yeah,
being kind of sour about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that is
and
the
you know
edit
what?
Versus...
I kind, okay,
yeah.
I kind of agree with Hamill.
Yeah.
His character is off. Is off.
It he, is off. Not, it is off.
Luke is, does
he
not...
He is not consistent.
That's not how Luke would behave.
Yeah.
Based on all of the other things.
Well, Luke... You could argue Luke wouldn't have behaved the way he behaved in Force Awakens, but you go, well, at least by the time we get to Last Jedi, he will have come around. And while he does on some level, the fact that he never even went to actually help his friends, even though he helped his friends, mm-hmm. it feels inconsistent with the original trilogy. It really does.
As we said, the Luke Skywalker that we grew up on.
And the Princess Leia is different in this.
The Luke Skywalker we grew up on was a loyal friend
yes.
at all times. He was worried, even while he was Jedi training,
yeah.
he had to leave to go save his friends.
Yes.
His friend of 40 years,
yeah.
Chewbacca.
Yeah.
That would be like if Sal walked in the door and I went, I get fucked.
Is he our Chewbacca?
Yeah. He's a big, tall, hairy bastard.
Yeah.
I mean, like, look, get out of here, you sloppy dago.
Yeah.
Chewbacca walks in to, spoilers, walks into Luke's hut, and he hasn't seen him in years.
Yeah.
And Luke goes, Chewie, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah.
Like, what yeah. was, that was just not even, it was character malfeasance.
Well, there was an argument, he was in a bad mood, you could say, the whole thing just, and you get the feeling J.J. Abrams, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what he does with the next one, it's kind of like, boy, I didn't want to do that. You know, because it feels like at the end of Force Awakens that Luke is more like he's amazed that Rey found her and that he's presenting her with this lightsaber. And then Luke takes the lightsaber and just throws it over his shoulder and is like, hey, fuck that. Who cares? Mm-hmm. And it just, the whole thing just feels off. It just, you know, and again, I'm saying if you're a Star Wars fan, you should see Last Jedi. But boy, they didn't. Did you just wipe your hand on the bedspread?
Is that no, was I just nice knocked off the duck.
Yeah, like that's not going to.
I didn't wipe my
I hair. Don't know. But listen, I look, Last Jedi certainly has problems. If I'm Disney.
Okay, in the last one.
If I'm Disney, though, they've said that Rian Johnson is going to make a new trilogy. Should they pull him from that, Corey?
They probably will.
Or do you feel like this is the direction that Disney wants to go
I
in?
I think Martin.
They want to distance themselves.
I think Martin McDonagh should do.
Oh,
the,
Jesus,
new
so
trilogy.
Fuck you.
No, actually, you know, what I should have.
Martin McDonagh's better than Rian Johnson.
When I was busy sucking off Shape of Water.
Yeah.
And I'm real curious to see what you think. You probably are going to hate it.
I don't know.
I think you might.
I hate when you say that about stuff.
Well,
this is a great movie and you're going to hate it.
Well, you hated Three
I didn't
Billboards.
Go to Three Billboards thinking I was going to hate it.
Okay, The Shape of Water is a much more enjoyable movie.
I'm sure.
And I will tell you this. I would watch Shape of Water a dozen times before I watched yes. Three Billboards again.
And you'll like Disaster Artist more than Three Billboards.
But I do think Three Billboards is a good film. It's okay. a very good film.
All right.
Anyway, what was I going to say? Oh, they should have given Guillermo del Toro, seeing Shape of Water.
Yeah.
Universal, who can't find their dicks with a flashlight,
mm-hmm.
who tried twice to start this dark universe because they made a Dracula movie that everybody forgets they made.
Yeah.
Dracula Untold or a Dracula Unborn or whatever the fuck it was.
Okay.
Then they kind of went, oops, forget about that one.
Yeah.
The Mummy is going to start the franchise. And then The Mummy tanked and then went, oh, okay, well, we're going to do Bride of Frankenstein. And so they keep fucking this new, they want to use their monsters as a property.
Yeah.
This is a better movie than they'll ever make on their own. This is a better
it's creature. It's a black creature from the Black
Moon. It's the
movie.
Best creature from the yeah. Black Moon movie they could imagine making.
Yeah.
And it would be brilliant. I know it's not as marketable as we can't slap this on a mug.
Yeah.
Because we got, you know, amphibian sex. But that would be much better. If they gave Guillermo del Toro.
Star Wars.
The problem with Star Wars is they keep trying to give artists the reins, and then they freak out about it.
And then they take stuff away from Gareth Edwards, and they took stuff away from...
Yeah, they keep hiring these
creative
directors, and then they don't want...
But
they don't give them
the here's a question that sort of hasn't been addressed or answered to my satisfaction. How much of this direction is Disney and not Rian Johnson? Because if this is Disney's push, Disney might be saying, hey, fuck those old movies, which,
right.
boy, that seems like a bad move.
Mm-hmm.
Because, hey, all those Star Wars fans, they're all in their 40s and 50s, man. We got to go for the kids, man. We need to be inclusive.
They've also
we need all the cute animals now.
Well, all the guys our age have kids that they've raised on Star Wars.
Yeah, so I think those kids, I think people are not going to forget the original trilogy. And I feel like this movie is a way to kind of push away from that.
Well,
there's nobody left from those.
I think the real
Princess Leia's alive at the end of this movie, but she's not Carrie alive. Fisher's dead, they so kept, she's got to be out of the next
they,
one, too.
They kept the wrong one alive.
Well.
Anyway.
Luke can always come back.
That's true.
As a force
ghost or whatever. But I hated the way they did that, too. He should have just gotten off that rock and walked, picked up his lightsaber and went to work. Anyway.
I know. We got to wrap this up.
We're done. But
no, but I mean.
I get why the fans gave that a bad score on Rotten Tomatoes, and the audience gave it a bad score. Not that it's not the state-of-the-art, big, expensive, exciting movie, because it is.
It is, yeah.
It's although
it works as one of those.
At a certain point, the excitement wears off because you're like, this is the third space battle we've had.
No, but when Luke shows up to confront Kylo Ren, that was exciting and that was fun. They did some stuff good in here. I just feel like they needed to put this back in the oven and let it bake a little bit, and this movie could have satisfied everyone.
Well,
but it didn't.
Intentionally took the canon.
Yeah.
And I get their desire to move on to different movies with new people in it.
Yeah, and that's fine.
And they've built this new cast, and the new cast is likable, by and large.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, we're going to keep making Star Wars movies forever, but what they really keep doing by continuing this franchise, which felt like a closed loop, like a full story in the original trilogy, is go, well, none of this shit matters. Because we're just going to keep blowing things up.
We're
going
to bring a new big bad in here. You know what I mean? Be another guy.
This is an unwinnable. This is a. Yeah. You know what they did? They turned it into Vietnam. It went from World War II to Vietnam. It never ends. It doesn't have a point.
But, well, you could argue that why not just keep everything related to the original trilogy? You have this Solo movie coming out in May, which is going to be the origin of Han Solo, which we know exactly what that's going to be. Han meets Chewie. Han wins Millennium Falcon from Lando. Mm. You know, all that. And Lando. All
from Dave, from
Dave,
Dave
Lando.
Lando,
yes.
The original pilot of the Millennium
They're
Falcon.
Working a one-nighter on the road, Han and Dave. By the way, I think Han's closing.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, I feel like... You know, Rogue One touched New Hope.
They're playing the Sands.
All right.
But and they have a poker game after the show.
I don't know. Maybe that's what they should have done. This new direction feels bad to me in a way that they really do need to make a correction. And I feel like maybe J.J. Abrams had a little more respect for the original trilogy and made Force Awakens more traditional. And Rian Johnson was kind of like, yeah, I'm going to do new shit. I'm not going to be beholden to the original trilogy.
Han was on character.
Yeah, Han did it. They did a good job.
In The Force Awakens,
they did, yes.
Han didn't act differently than Han Solo has ever acted, right? He was kind of roguish and put off by having to be doing stuff, but is a hero ultimately.
By and large, they got that
the job done,
even though they didn't give Luke much to do in Force Awakens, they by and large got that original trilogy characters right.
Right.
But I don't even think they got Yoda right in Last Jedi either.
No.
Because they're like, how can Yoda have lightning in the real world when he's a Force ghost? And there's a lot of stuff, man. A lot of stuff. And again, I hate to be the nerd that's like, well, this does not canon. It doesn't feel
well, but you know what? Those guys are right to preserve the integrity of the characters.
No.
In terms of like nickel and diming about what force powers and how they work, that's probably a little too much. But they're right in that if the characters don't behave the way that they've behaved for if you know what I'm saying, you know me for a long time, you know what I know pretty much what you're going to think on a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
If you were just wildly out of character and just started being, you know, then you would be upset.
Well, you know, look, and the other thing is I'm not against the new stuff, but the new stuff's got to be done well. And Force Awakens did that new stuff well. You know, Maz Kanata, not good, so they reduced the amount of that,
A waste of time.
So they got rid of little Maz Kanatas as a cameo in this one. You know, it's kind of like a Jar Jar, where Jar Jar ended up being kind of cast to the side by episodes 2 and 3. But, you know, they need to do the new stuff well in the Casino Planet, and Benicio Del Toro and Laura Dern were not well done. And that's a problem, too. You got to do that new stuff well. You got to do it to the same level that Lucas did with the original trilogy. And that's why he didn't like, you know, the prequel trilogy didn't match that, and people didn't like those. And boy, this felt more like a prequel movie than an original trilogy movie. And that's the error.
Well,
that's the ultimate flaw here.
Yeah, that's... So.
Anyway, I think that's going to do it for the show.
We've had enough.
I think so. Well, Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Well, this is really
Happy
honestly,
Hanukkah.
Thank you. This is a
Happy
lovely,
Kwanzaa. Yeah, yeah,
it's
cool
a
bear mug.
Gift. I appreciate
Did it hold
it.
Your coffee well today?
Yeah, it's a fine mug.
Good, good, good. I'm
so
glad
I
you
can,
like it.
Enjoy that.
A Colbert mug for Corey. Again, check us out, joelradio.net. We got the links to the Star Wars show and all
now,
that stuff.
Now I'm going to have to get a Kimmel mug next time I go to LA.
We'll get you that. And what else can I say? I'm on 9:10 a.m. with Mike Bonner every Tuesday night. Go check us
Detroit's
out.
Detroit's home of controversial talk radio.
9:10 a.m. superstation.com. You can check me out over there on Tuesday nights with Mike. It's always fun there. What else? New comedy class, advanced comedy class. If you're a comic who wants to get better, teach you how to work professionally. I'll be doing that starting again January 6th at Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle. And I'll be in the comedy series with Bill Hildebrand.
Oh,
boy, that's
got
I got a lot of reaction about my rant against the one-nighters from a couple weeks
well,
ago. Or when Bashar was on
you,
the phone.
You were hot on that one.
The bull ring. I tore them down, didn't I?
Ooh.
That talk about rage.
Stampede at the bull ring.
But I'm going back on the road January 5th, so pray for me on that one.
You can see me at the bull ring on February 9th. No, I'm kidding.
Jesus
I'm
Christ.
Kidding.
Anyway, yeah. Let's get out of here. Thank you, Corey. Thank you all for listening. Happy New Year. We'll catch you in 2018. Good night, everybody.